Beth Anna DeBlantis for another day of broadcast info.
We're on the stream. We're streaming.
We're swimming
upstream.
I've been complaining to my doctor about stream. About the stream. And
it's a problem.
Yeah. I mean,
It's not right.
You get older. It's weird. It's just, I have never been able to explain, or I don't feel comfortable with it, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
So
my little one had a problem with the stream over the weekend, so we had some cleaning up to do there, too.
Oh, no.
So it goes.
That's a HIPAA violation. I can talk about myself. You can't talk about her.
My daughter, I can. She's allowed to happen when you're a little one.
Okay. All right. I know. She's not feeling well.
No, she's not feeling well. She's got the, we believe she does have the flu.
The flu.
And we're taking her to her doctor this afternoon. But
I was going to make an R. Kelly joke, but I think
what?
Too appropriate.
Oh, my God.
No.
Oh, Kevin.
I'm just saying. R. Kelly knows us, you know.
Things get wacky on the stream. This is what I've learned about this crew.
They do.
It's a different show.
I held back. I didn't make the actual R. Kelly joke. I'm just telling you that thought ran through my mind. The stream talk, R. Kelly's in the news. I figured, you know, they go together. But I resisted making the R. Kelly joke.
We're talking about Anna's daughter.
Exactly.
You need to separate your comedy, Kevin.
I did. That's what I'm saying.
You bring it up in the same bathroom.
Yeah.
Bring it up later. There'll be more opportunities to do R. Kelly stream jokes.
Plenty. Okay. Plenty of them.
Yeah, probably bad timing.
Yeah.
Most of them will be bad timing, though.
Yes.
It's a very small window, right?
Yeah. Most of the Oscars were bad timing last night, too. It's a separate issue. We'll get to that in just a moment.
I talked to the nurse and gave her all the symptoms, and then I got a note from the school, and they said that two children in her actual class have now been confirmed influenza cases, and I believe they may have both had the flu shot as well. So it's just a matter of how those strains work and what they cover and what's happening each year, but it's ugly. And I remember this crew, all of us got our flu shots way back when, at the beginning of the season. And I thank God I have it right now, frankly, because I've been taking care of her. So it's one of those things.
And did she had one though too?
She did, yeah. So it's just one of those things.
Yeah, it does happen. And it depends.
I had 104 fever overnight. We were both up all night, and then I thought I had it under control, and then it spiked again to 104. And just when you think it's breaking, it just keeps coming back. Without Motrin, she isn't. It isn't coming down. So.
Well, so
just another warning about the flu. How dangerous it is.
I was just speaking, and I may be allowed to quote him, our new medical expert on this program. That is from Northwestern Medicine, the head of emergency medicine. He was just telling us in a meeting that flu season is expected to go a little longer this year because even though the protection has been pretty good from this year's vaccine, there have been some mutations that are seen in the, that's what happens is that the flu shot is based on last year's viruses that were in the environment.
Right.
Now, those can mutate over time, and that's how it just keeps. That's why you don't just get one vaccine for the flu. You have to do it every year because they're trying to either get ahead of or react to what were the big strains in the previous 12 months. So that's now this one's mutated out, and there's a little bit people are a little bit sicker, and it's lasting a little longer.
And so they're seeing the cases come into the emergency rooms, right? Is that what he's confirming?
Yeah. So
well,
that's where we are. That is where we are.
I'll be happy when the cold is over and the flu season is over.
Yeah,
both those things.
This was
rear view mirror.
This was a total piece of poop today.
This
weather. And yesterday. And what in the... Can I just ask a question?
Yeah.
I have a few things I'd like to bring up with Tom Skilly at 4 o'clock today.
Really? Why are you mad at Tom? Why do you get mad at Tom? He told us exactly as it was going to happen. He laid it out.
What? First of all, what was that snow weird, like, just, it was like snowy mist that we had over the weekend. And then yesterday, we had the wind. Was it on Saturday? The wind was into yesterday. The wind topped out at 60 miles an hour in some places.
It was incredible. It felt like my building was shaking. Our patio doors kept just flying open. I had to, tie them tight with the dog leash. I'm like, this is ridiculous. It was unbelievable. You saw the flying
debris. You're like a disaster movie this weekend.
It really was. It was not fun to be at our household this weekend. But there were bigger issues with the wind.
I'm not looking at my backyard. I know that IKEA umbrella that I left out there so lazily.
Oh, I have it.
I heard heard stuff sliding around on the roof, and I'm like, I don't even want to see what's going on up there, because what am I going to do?
I live 60 miles from you, and I've got your IKEA umbrella. That's how this goes.
Yeah. It just sort of circulates. You know, every year people get a little new, they get some new furniture, and they pay it forward.
In Bolingbrook, they know that that's it, during a high wind and thunderstorm season, tornado season, they just all swap their trampolines with each other because they just all end up in the next guy's yard.
Just keep it for the next season.
Right.
You know, why bother?
Why move it back? It's because it's moving over.
Very heavy.
You want to not invest if your next door neighbor to the south and the west of you has a nicer trampoline than you have. Just wait. Because it will be yours eventually.
It'd be a good strategy in real estate to live sort of the wind patterns of the people who've got the nice furniture.
Yeah, that's how we roll.
Might as well.
That's what I know. I know how that goes. All right, Ben Bradley's going to come join us in just a moment here. Tell us about the latest in the Smollett case as Eddie Johnson from the Chicago Police Department goes on Good Morning America to go contradict what Jussie Smollett said on Good Morning America last week. Interesting.
More evidence is out there.
And R. Kelly pleads not guilty, but is he out yet? Did I miss that in the last 30 minutes?
He's not out. No.
Not out yet. Okay. Because he was supposed to be getting out on, they say he was going to post bond Saturday morning. He didn't. And his lawyer, Steve Greenberg, who's been on the show a number of times when he was doing some other high-profile cases, was like, you know, he's got a little trouble with the money right now.
He does. This is very messy. He's got hangers-on. He's got some mismanagement and a lot of bills that haven't been paid and some child support that hasn't been paid, and he's got to sort things out.
All right. Well, Ben will have the latest on that. And then we'll also talk to Bob Mylan, who used to be a Cook County prosecutor, who can explain exactly what R. Kelly can expect.
Hmm.
I've got some thoughts on that, too.
Steve Greenberg did pull the Rokhan thing, though, where he's like the very, very nice judge, very fair judge, good-looking judge.
Who lost some weight. I just like to say
excellent
that the judge looks excellent. And so have you been working out, Judge? Do you lift?
He did do that.
Yeah.
I thought
that's
about
what you got to do. You always have to, if you're an attorney in this town, I'm not, but if I were, you just always compliment the judges.
Better safe.
I compliment all the judges just in case I'm ever going to be in front of them. Because you never, ever know.
Cover the bases.
Ben Bradley joins us. It's the Rokhan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, Ben Bradley is standing by right now in the WGN TV newsroom.
We've dressed in our pre-mayoral election best. I see you're sporting the pocket square. I'm in a suit coat right now.
I know. That's what I'm ready for.
You look sharp,
Ben.
We're
bringing it. Oh,
I mean, I like the suit.
I have always said you have wonderful eyesight.
Yes.
Yes.
Actually, it's getting worse, but you still look good, Ben. You look good.
Thank you very much.
Well, I'm adjusting now for the CLTV cameras.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important. That's good. You know, tuck it in and then sit on the end of your coat.
And inhale. Inhale.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, don't exhale. I know that, Ben, if you watch Ben's news at 4 o'clock, you realize he only takes one breath.
Yeah. Did you know you could hold your breath from 4 to 5 p.m. every day?
Nobody.
Male Spanx.
And don't forget to do what all my wife's friends do when there's a picture, is they put their arm out at their side. I don't know, what does that do? Does that get rid of...
Yeah, you saw that on the Oscars red carpet. Everyone kind of has that pose with sort of the elbow that comes out and sort of is slimming. It sort of creates...
Right, and then you look over the shoulder. That's the big move.
Yeah, kind of the... Oh, is that you? I was about to leave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now turn all the way. Ben, I want you to do this for those watching now, all right, now turn a little even more, a little more to your right. Turn to your right.
The look on your face.
No, no, and turn your head back, not your shoulders.
Duck lips. Duck lips.
Oh, great. Now I threw my back out. Oh.
Now you got to do this. Hold on.
Now you look good. See? He's got a little bit of Zoolander thing going.
Yeah. You got to turn all the way this way.
Good look.
That's what you got to do.
Nailed it.
In there?
Nailed it.
Right. That's what I do. I got to tell you, so it hides your gut, moves it over to the other side of the shots, and then you're like, and then you have to look, and then you have to look up and do the full Clooney, I'm a billionaire.
Right. Right, yes.
Well, you're missing your chicken arm, though. That's the only thing. Because slimming part of it all. Is that kind of illuminates a space between the arm and the body that creates...
Oh, boy, Rose on his feet right now.
Aren't you people sorry that you're not seeing this on the CLTV if you're just listening on the stream right now? Hold on. I got to do it like this.
It's a sight to behold.
Hold on, now you got to... All right, like that.
Yeah. And you know, how you doing? At Nordstrom's, they're selling male Spanx these days, too. So that's another way we could perhaps up our game.
Hey, Spanx have helped a lot, I will tell you. Just saying, in the female world, those have helped a lot of us.
True. I got a terrible, terrible admission to make.
Oh, boy.
You wear a bro. Is that what you're going to
say? No.
It's a man's ear, damn it.
Ben and I were just recently at a dinner with a bunch of really men's men, manly men, men who
can put other people in jail,
right,
and have guns,
right, and they were all packing, mm-hmm. and they brave danger every day,
yeah.
And so we're sitting there talking, and then the conversation turns to me and Ben talking about Spanx and if we ever worn them on the air, which I swear to God, all these manly men of law enforcement and the derring do were like they brought it up just to watch the two. Puffy dudes from television.
It didn't help our rep. You and I were both still wearing makeup either.
Right.
But the best was, in row, this may have happened before you sat down, but so there's like five or six of us, and a drunk guy shows up at the table.
Oh, wrong table.
And says, "You mind if I sit here?" And he sits down with us. And again, Ro and I are the only non-law enforcement types at this table.
The only guy's not packing.
Right. And so, yeah, we try to be nice. How you doing? The guy buys a bottle of wine for the table, but it was, and he could barely form a sentence. And so, finally, one of the law enforcement types gets up, mm-hmm. says, "Hey, buddy, why don't you come with me?" And he says, "No, I'm fine." He goes, grabs him by the back of the neck, the kind of, I'm not making a scene, but you will comply. Takes him out, and he's kind of in the bar area. And I turned to one of these other guys. I said, "Well, should we go out there and have his back?" And the guy looks at me and goes, "No, trust me. He doesn't need any help from you."
Right. Yeah. It was quite a thing.
Well, what was the answer?
To which?
Spanx. Do you wear them?
Oh, not currently, but I have. No. Yeah.
Have you really?
Yeah. We talked about this.
No.
Yeah.
No. That's nothing wrong with them.
It doesn't really work.
Helpful.
They don't really work. I don't know. I didn't find them to work.
Really?
I find they work.
Yeah.
You do the whole body thing, like the unitard.
No, where does it show up? Is it like a shirt, or is this
there's
like
there's several
a...
different ones. You've got the ones that are just kind of like, they go high-waisted, so they bring all the middle section in. Then you've got the ones that are sort of like a unitard, so they start up on the top, with some straps, and then they'll bring you down.
I'm picturing like the 1920s bathing suit.
Yeah,
like a
one-piece. Uh-huh. Sort of like that.
So
this thing just looked like this. It was like this big. It was like a gigantic like ace bandage for your gut. It was like just a big like round thing that
you kind of hook together in the front or you slide it on.
And that
I'm
was
glad to hear it wasn't a hook.
Corset.
Yeah, wait, no, you know what? No. Let me. I'm gonna take that back. Hold on. No. It was like a T-shirt. It was like a T-shirt
that went. T-shirt.
Yeah, but I swear to God, I think I had organ damage as a result of it.
Could you breathe in this thing?
Not well.
Does it just kind
of? I had it for like the first 2 weeks of a season that we had at Windy City Live, and I thought, all right, well, I'll just try this and see what goes on. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And it was horrifying. It was like my blood pressure went up. it felt like
a sausage at Polina Meat Market.
Yeah,
huh?
Or those dolls that you squeeze them and their eyes bug out.
That's how it feels sort of wearing them.
Wow.
When you take them off, then your eyes go back in your head, and it feels great.
Yeah.
And what did you look like when you just put it on before you put the rest of the clothes on? I mean, is everything just poking out at every?
It's just weird. It's just a weird feeling.
Mm.
Yeah, it didn't work.
Sort of smushes it together in the middle.
Yeah,
I'm impressed.
I want to thank CLTV for having this humiliating, my most humiliating television moment right
Fawn,
now.
Fawn, the CLTV producer in the booth right now, who always asks us, "Hey, tell me what you're going to talk about so I can have video on hand," is right now throwing her hands up there, going, "I have no video of male Spanx to accompany this."
Manx, as we like to call them.
Manx.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, let us talk about what she does have video of. All right. So Eddie Johnson on Good Morning America.
Yes.
I've never seen in my many years of covering this town, in all of its great glory and sometimes stupidity, I have never, ever seen the Chicago Police Department react like this to a story. It's like Eddie Johnson's out there with the police report going, "All right, here's what we got."
Right.
I mean, they're basically daring him to not tell the truth or to try to take them on legally.
I think you've got a couple things going. I think the police department was certainly upset and angered by this allegedly false report. You also have Eddie Johnson, who may very well be out of a job here in a couple of months with the turn of the mayoral administration. Really, you know, I think freed up in many ways, if you will, because normally the line from police and prosecutors is once a case has been charged, you don't go on camera talking about it. But yet Eddie Johnson did that this morning on Good Morning America. The other thing I think you have going on is Good Morning America and Robin Roberts are trying to do a little backpedaling here because they were the ones that sat down with Jussie Smollett and did this interview in which, you know, if the charges are true, lied through his teeth. And right. Robin Roberts and GMA, who I respect a lot, you know, gave a very, very sympathetic story to Jussie Smollett. And within days, prosecutors and police say it was all, you know, a crock. And so I think by inviting Eddie Johnson on, in a way, it's a little bit of a make good, right? Like it's, hey, you know, we were at the forefront here of some of these claims about your city. Why don't you come on and help us set the record straight?
It makes sense, but Eddie Johnson's been on GMA before, like recently, in the last 6 months. And so it's interesting. It feels as if there's some sort of connectivity there.
What was the previous time? Was that after his organ transplant with his son?
Yes, that's right. Exactly right.
Yeah.
Right. So that's a story, I suppose, in and of itself, but it's still sort of rare to see.
But, yeah,
and you believe, I mean, since you're no longer at ABC, I can ask you this question. Do you believe that ABC is trying to backpedal here because they realize they went the wrong way at the network by putting him on GMA in the first place?
You know, I'm not going to speak for ABC, but I can tell you that when a journalist feels like they have been lied to and given that lie, you know, prominent play, there's absolutely the instinct to, hey, let's correct the record with the same force and fashion that we promoted the lie.
And that's fair. Absolutely
fair. And you know, it's like the old saying is, you know, a bad headline will be on the front page, and the correction is you know, on page 86 of a newspaper in small type at the bottom. Mm-hmm. I'm glad Eddie Johnson was given the opportunity to go on and for a national audience, tell a different story about Chicago.
Yeah,
all right.
I am too.
All right, Ben.
You guys keep working on your look, okay? Yeah. You're almost there.
Want to try it one more time, Ben?
Hey, if you're not going to use those anymore, why don't you just send them my way, Ro?
Yeah, no. This has been years ago.
Please launder
them.
I lost them in two moves.
Is that when you knew the last relationship was over? She threw your male Spanx on the front lawn?
Second to last.
It's good we can laugh about this, Ro.
Yeah.
One day you'll cry about it? Is that what you're going to say?
No. I think he already has.
No, my accountant already does. And my errors. But other than that, I'm good to go. All right, thank you, Ben.
Yep.
Appreciate your time, as always, as far as you know.
All of these young girls are not lying, ladies and gentlemen. It is impossible, and it is outrageous for Mr. Greenberg and other enablers of Mr. Kelly to suggest that all of these young ladies, after 28 years, are lying about this conduct.
Oh, boy. R. Kelly's not having a good month.
No.
Between that series coming out and now having to show up. Mm-hmm. And he's been in Cook County Jail, now the medical unit of Cook County Jail, because they do that with people like R. Kelly because they don't want him getting killed in general population. Mm-hmm. It tends to be bad publicity, I think.
That wouldn't look good.
Yeah, they've got him in the medical unit, and they're assuming he's going to be able to post bond. Although his attorney, Steve Greenberg, says, "Hey, listen, he lost his record. His record company isn't paying him anymore.
They dropped him.
Yeah,
from the label.
The issue's got a lot of hangers on.
He specifically mentioned that the hangers on, and then he did say mismanagement. Like so his finances are a mess.
Really mismanagement because." The record label isn't paying him anymore. He would only get paid on doing tours or get his residuals from ongoing sales, which I don't think are going to be all that up. So it really has nothing to do with that. He would be getting that through the system anyway. All right, Bob Mylan is with us. And Bob is a former Cook County prosecutor, one of the most respected ever to work in this county. I might, I might venture to say, but I happen to know it also is true. You talk to people who have worked with Bob, and you're, you know, the a king amongst princes over there. Over at,
very kind of you to say.
Yeah, that's well, that's what they say. So let me let's start with this. Based on Kim Fox's presentation on Saturday, when they took him into custody, you know, or day after they took him into custody, after the court appearance, and she basically read the proffer to the judge, and everybody cut away, including CNN, who's under no obligation to cut away based on decency because they're a cable network.
Mm-hmm.
They cut away because it was so specifically laid out. It, interesting, because they also did the same thing with Smollett in its own way, because it was so specifically laid out, but, you know, not, you know, the same sort of issues. What do you think, first of all, does that surprise you that they lay it all out as much as they did in the R. Kelly case?
No. State's under an obligation to lay out the facts, you know, for the court.
But for the press.
Yeah, but once it's public record, and I'm assuming what was said to the press was the same thing that was read in open court, it's fair game. So it doesn't surprise me that she laid out the facts, as long as they were consistent with what was read in court.
What about the sex tape that's come out, and they say there could be another one, even more lurid, on the way, and how those play in terms of the evidence in a trial? They can be challenged, for sure, can't they?
They can be challenged, but it's going to be tough. I mean, if in fact there are sex tapes that corroborate what these what now women, but what once were young girls, are saying, he's in dire straits. I mean, it's the ultimate corroboration. If you have the young lady saying, I was 13 when this happened, or I was 14, that's me, that's him. He created
this. Prove that based on the tape.
And there's the tape. It's pretty tough to get around it.
So, unless you have the date on the tape, I don't know, we haven't seen any of these, but if there's no date on the tape, how do they date a tape?
You don't have to give the exact dates. You can give on or about, and I read the 10-count indictment this morning before I came over here, and they do that. They give, for most of the counts, it's on or about, which is sufficient in Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Is that the sort of thing that a defense lawyer, Greenberg, or whoever ends up with this case, if it's not him, that they would try to go after that tape and say, well, that's, you know, first of all, they're role-playing, that's not really the girl, which is what they did in the first case, to say that that's not really the girl. And that might not be R. Kelly either, even though that somehow they said that, and there were some people in the jury who said, well, it may not be him. But in the girl's case, specifically, they did try to, because she didn't look a lot like the girl in the, she didn't look as much like the girl in the tape as one might have anticipated, because she'd grown up a number of years.
And she wouldn't testify.
And she refused to testify.
And the one woman, young woman, who was also on that tape and the only person to testify against him in that 2008 trial, speaking out now, saying, well, look, you know, it was difficult to stand up in that case, and it didn't feel as if as many people, I guess, believed her. I mean, is that really what it comes down to here, that these victims have to be believed?
Well, of course, but there's a huge difference between what happened in the case that was charged in 2003 and went to trial in 2008 and what's going on now. In that case, as you pointed out, the girl didn't cooperate with the prosecution, nor did her parents. And that's a big problem for the jury, okay? And not only in identifying her and things of that nature, but you have to remember that jurors take time out of their lives to participate in the trial, right? They take maybe a week or two out of their lives to go to 26th Street and listen to evidence. And if the victim doesn't care enough to get on the witness stand, and the parents of the victim didn't care enough, why should the jurors? And that was one of the big battles that we had back then. This is a whole different game. Now you have not girls, but you have young women who are going to point at the tape and come in here and say, this is what he did to me when I was 13 or 14 years old, and a whole different ballgame.
And the fact that you have multiple women, I think, also adds to the power of the nature of having to discredit all of them rather than just one of them.
That's right. And my guess is they'll file evidence of other crimes and put these cases together, and, you know,
I think more people will come forward here because it tends to be a cascade, like in the Cosby case.
I absolutely think that four could become six, could become eight, could become ten.
Mm-hmm.
And what they'll do is, if I'm assuming, and based on reading the indictment, that Mr. Kelly did the same thing in these cases that he did in the other one, where he's actually on tape, he's fixing the camera, he's talking into the camera, he's saying things. The sex acts that he committed are very consistent with what he did to the other young lady. He's in dire straits.
Well, let's talk about the Michael Avenatti was on Windy City Live earlier today, and one of the things that we asked him was about this idea of the enablers, as he calls them, all the people around R. Kelly who may have been creating introductions of these women to R. Kelly or trying to explain to the parents that, because we do have a case of this that actually comes from that documentary series that was done, that they had people that would stand up for R. Kelly and say, hey, no, you, everything here about him is he was just looking out for these girls professionally and personally, and he just wants them to do well in their lives, and that's why he takes such an interest in them. And these were other adults who were doing that. Are there crimes committed for people who are knowingly lying to the parents or to the kids?
Yes, if he can prove it. So if you can prove that individuals knowingly knew Mr. Kelly was taking these young girls and having sex with them and doing these things to them, then yeah, they have they're in jeopardy in regards to being charged criminally. And just going back to the main point of this whole thing, anytime a lot of money's involved, this stuff happens. Anytime, you know, all these people are being paid by him. You know, they're not friends. They're people that were being paid by him.
The hangers-on.
These enablers that you're referring to, yeah. And it's all because of money. And people cross lines and do things you'd never think they do when money's involved.
There's no question. I mean, I covered this back in the day when the first tape came out, and I interviewed the people in the neighborhood, the friends of the alleged victim, who was allegedly underage at the time, and talked to a lot of family members, and they all said that there were certain belongings that they had. One of them had a new car, somebody else had a new apartment, and certain there weren't people who were not testifying, and there wasn't a lot of cooperation, and I think that's the biggest problem in cases like these. If you don't have that cooperation, these cases can fall apart. And you look at all these years now that have gone by where there are more and more allegations of the same nature and what could have been had that not happened.
That's right. Think about it. Parents turned a blind eye to some of these girls. Parents. They knew what he was doing, but because they were receiving financial benefits from Mr. Kelly, they turned a blind eye for the, on their own little girls. Hard to believe.
It is hard to believe.
It is unbelievable.
It's so troubling. It's so perverse. The whole thing. And like you say, Ro, it's that. Like you saw this with Harvey Weinstein. In some ways, you saw that those enablers who surround him, who don't tell anything, they send girls their way. Those were girls who were of age or women who were of age. But the same allegations are here. One of the parents even said he thought his daughter was being held against her will in one of his houses, but couldn't reach her because her cell phone had been taken away. And then he said he got threatened by someone connected to R. Kelly. I would assume that would be a crime if it could be proven.
If it can be proven, sure.
Well, it is. It's tragic in a lot of respects because it was so clear back in 2003, and then the trial, which it took 5 years to get him to trial, right? Because people were giving him a pass. I mean, you know, these are obviously, you know, the docket. You're a former Cook County State's Attorney, Bob, so you get it. The dockets are full, but 5 years on a case like this, especially a heater case like this, seems like a really long time. And a lot of it was because they were giving sway to him. Because there were people, he was getting continuances that I don't think the average defendant would have gotten. And this is a situation now where he was, before, during, and after this, these cases that they're looking at now took place in that time frame and thereafter.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact is that even the risk of going to jail for the period of time he was going to go to jail for in the first case didn't stop him. And then when he got out, the risk that he'd just gotten away with something that he potentially gotten away with something that he allegedly was accused of.
Yeah.
That didn't stop behavior that now has him alleged to have done again.
Yeah.
Did I say that right for
a lawyer?
I
knew what you were saying.
I read between the lines.
You understand,
I got it.
Okay, thank you, Bob.
But the other shocking part about it is how many people were there rooting for him, you know, back in 2003 through 2008. So how many people were happy that he beat the charge of doing what he did to this little girl? I mean, I remember seeing the tape, and it was terrible. And the one thing that stuck out in my mind was she had a baby face. I mean, she was a little girl.
She was a baby.
And she was afraid. You could see the fear in her eyes when he did that to her. And, and so I'm watching this, and then I'm seeing these hordes of people outside of 26th Street rooting for him.
Yeah.
And it's tough to understand.
Oh, well, yes.
Impossible.
There's so many things you have to understand in the city, but that's in the top 10 of my list.
Well, why does it take a lifetime documentary for this to happen? Do you have any thoughts about that? I have my own, but...
Yeah, people have to come forward. I mean, people have to, you know, everybody knows what number you call, 911. Everybody knows where a police department is. People have to come forward and help. And I think because of his celebrity and because of the money that he sprinkled the infield with, he avoided, you know, any criminal jeopardy for all these years. But I think that may have come to an end.
The piece here, specifically the stuff about this 14-year-old, one of the reasons that they know she's 14 is because she talks about being 14. He talks about her being 14.
On the tape.
Yes, and in a sexually provocative way, she discusses her own genitalia as 14-year-old. Now, I don't know, I've not seen it, so I don't know if there is prompting by him to do that. But one of the arguments that is made here, and one of the other, I guess, confounding variables in cases like this, is that even though it's clearly against the law, 14-year-old cannot make a decision like that. There are people who wish to defend the acts of people like R. Kelly, saying, "Well, it's actually the way, you know, it's those girls. You know, they're raised without parents, or they, you know, they just have a different moral compass. And once they're 14 years old, they're, you know, and they've developed sexually, then they're, you know, they're good to go." And you hear that consistently. Again, it's almost a cultural argument as opposed to a legal argument. And I to this day do not understand how adults can, you know, who are responsible for these kids or responsible for kids, you know, that are like these kids in any way, shape, or form, can make that argument.
Yeah, it's indefensible. I mean, it's, you know, unfortunately, we live in a world with all types of people, right? And anybody that defends that in the way you just described are morons. I mean,
yeah.
It's not even a close call. You know, there's no place in this country or in this world for people that would allow that to happen.
Right. And even if a 14-year-old girl or 15-year-old girl, whatever it happens to be, who doesn't know any better, you know, or this may not, you know, be her first encounter like this or whatever it happens to be, does not make it right. And why that's not sort of just addressed immediately and said, okay, well, this is where this is at, right? Yeah. Especially when it is, I mean, and the law is very specific about this because it has to be. If it's, you know, like two 13-year-olds or 14-year-olds, that's a different situation than a 14-year-old and a 35-year-old or a 40-year-old or whatever the case may be. I don't know how old he was in this particular video. I'm not sure that. I think it actually has been. It was in the
right.
Proffer, I think. But he was clearly 30 years her senior. Right.
Sure, sure. I mean, if you saw the original tape, you know, it's unbelievable.
The age difference is glaring,
and
so many other things.
I mean, he urinates on her.
Right.
When he's done with her, he takes money and throws it at her.
Mm.
And this is a little girl who's looking up at him afraid, you know, and no human being with a heart could allow that to happen or do it. So it's shocking.
It is shocking. You know, if you see the Lifetime documentary, you see the stories from the alleged victims talking about it in a way that he was a master of control and that he would tell them, you don't get your access to your cell phones. I tell you when you can call. I tell you when you can bathe. I tell you when you can go here or do that or to talk to anyone. And there was this whole control of these very young girls. I mean, young at that time. No access to outside family. And you can see how, you know, their stories were harder and harder to tell without any evidence, right? How do you come out when you're 14 and you probably blame yourself in a situation like that? I'm sure we see that from victims all the time.
Sure. He's preying on young women who, you know, come from impoverished homes. You know, so if you travel to the west side or the south side of Chicago and many other places of the country, you'll see poverty like you won't believe. So here you are, you're a young girl, you have nothing. You run into the star of all stars. He finds you attractive. He's driving you around in his limousines. He's taking you to parties and nightclubs that you'd never be able to go. He's buying you clothes.
He was making promises in some of these cases that he was going to make him a star. I'm going to help your singing career. Come to my recording studio. Turns out his recording studio has a bed in it. You know, that was illegal. You weren't allowed to have that. But, you know, it all sort of fits together that they're the manipulation behind how you could do something like this.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, Bob, thank you very much. Appreciate you being
such
with us today. And I know there's much more to come here. There's also the we'll have to see what happens with the Jussie Smollett story in Chicago, whether or not he wants to continue to make a case here. It seems obviously the Cook County state attorney is not going to pursue a case against these two individuals for beating him up, right? So the question is, will there be a pursuit? Just quickly as a little preview there, do you think there will be a pursuit against Jussie Smollett by the Cook County State's Attorney for filing false police report?
Well, they've already filed the felony disorderly conduct, which is based on filing the false police report, so they have, in effect, done that.
Do you think they'll pursue that?
Oh, they will. Yeah, they're not going to back down from this. And the issue is he going to get penitentiary time or is he going to get probation? And I think that because of the premeditation involved, the fact that he enlisted two other individuals to commit this crime, the fact that he diverted hundreds of man hours of Chicago police time that was much, much needed on our gang-ridden streets, that he took away from that, I think he's looking at prison time.
Will he have to pay that back? Could that be part of a sentence?
Absolutely. My guess is it's north of $500,000.
Wow.
And, he'd better have to pay it back.
Bob, in your professional experience, would he have been not charged if he had quickly admitted to it, even though he'd already filed a police report, come back a couple days later when the story started to unravel? Do you think that they would not have charged him?
If he did it immediately, and let's say it was based on a mental health issue, he was in a crisis, and you got to take those things into consideration. Somebody breaks down and does something stupid, and they pick up a phone and call 911, and then within hours they say, I made it up. You'd cut people a break on that.
Yeah.
This isn't even close to that scenario.
All right. And everyone's going to jail. That's the way I look at it now. I've gotten to this point, unfortunately, Bob, in my own life where it's like, I don't want to hear it. Mm-hmm. You talk to guys who've been doing what you did for so many years and cops who do
seen
what they
everything.
Do for so many years. That's the way they are. All right, round them all up. That's the way I look at it. But they don't. But luckily, the Constitution doesn't look at it the same way.
No.
All right, Bob Mylan, thank you so much for being with
you,
us.
Thank you,
Bob.
Former Cook County prosecutor. We'll be talking to him again about these cases as they move forward and others. On WGN Everywhere, on the stream as we are right now. We'll be back on the radio coming up after the White Sox game right now. What are we in, the bottom of the fifth right now?
Bottom of the fifth, yeah.
All right, that. And we will await. What's the scoring?
Your White Stockings are up 4-3 on the Giants.
How about that?
Yoan Moncada and Luis Robert having a day. That's a good thing.
Luis Robert is having a day?
Luis Robert's having a day. He's got an RBI triple.
See, now there was talk he was not going to come up this season.
I don't know if he's going to come up this season. But he's an absolute monster.
He is a monster. You saw him at the convention. He is a large cat. And a much larger cat than he was when he started. You know, these guys, they get into the professional system and look out! So, all right.
It's a good sign.
Yes, it is. All right, well, that's all coming your way. But Tom Skilling is going to join us. So if you're listening on the web, stay here. Mr. Skilling will be here to talk about what happened this weekend, and I just don't understand it. He warned us. He was right.
Yep.
But still. And there's more there's more stuff to come, which I don't like.
Nope. Not one bit.
No, not at all.
That was ugly this weekend.
Very. Right here on WGN.
Yes.
All right. Tom Skilling is joining us. Tom, the first hour, which was on the CLTV.
Yes.
I made some admissions I've never made before.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Juicy.
Did some things, said some things, made some observations about my own history and behavior, past. I probably shouldn't have.
Well, wasn't that bad.
Well, I admitted that I wore Spanx, but then I got I tried to rope Ben Bradley into that too, and he wasn't going, even though he changed his story based on a dinner that we had a couple weeks ago with a bunch of other guys. Because we're with manly men, Tom. I don't know. None of this ever happens. We're perfume princes of television and radio. We're not manly men. We don't run toward fire and into gunfire and toward things that
we're not saving lives every day.
No. We shower at least once a day, if not more.
Our hands really don't get dirty on those days.
I have the softest hands.
Occasionally, I have to wipe down the keyboard because people leave like donut crumbs and stuff. But other than that, I really have no problem keeping my hands clean.
What exactly is bringing on this self-inspection that we're hearing?
Because I just got to ask a question. I don't know why. Somehow Spanx came up, and I admit it.
Wait, did you bring it up, or did the manly men bring it up? Because I can't imagine them bringing it up.
I don't know what it was. I don't know how it came
up. Was it just like sort of a self-admission? Maybe you had a glass of wine and started talking?
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen that before.
I'll have a nice Chardonnay. I know these men are all having vodka gimlet.
Yeah, really.
But I'll have a Chardonnay.
The bourbon's flowing.
And I would just like to say, I did indeed once wear Spanx.
And there it was. It was sitting out there.
I mean, you shake these guys' hands, and their bones are broken, and one of them has a bullet hole through the hand.
I know.
Something like that.
Those are real men.
Right, right.
Shot at.
Yeah.
Not like us, right?
Yeah, I got these things. So I've never did it. I actually did once have a woman say to me, have you ever done a day's work of
That's
anything?
Really
I go,
mean.
No.
That well, is mean.
I have a golf callus on my left hand. I mean, Kevin knows what this is like.
Yeah.
You got a little callus.
Where does the callus happen?
They happen right at the top of your palm before your fingers start sometimes.
I get one by my pinky. It's horrible. It's painful,
the pinky is the, right? You get
all
a little
those
callus.
Golf swings.
Now,
you know?
I have noticed that they've gone away for the season, but they will be back.
Well, I'll tell you, you guys have me beat because I only have weather map ink smudges. So...
I've got you guys all beat. I rubbed my niece's cheek to say goodbye to her. They were out in the Southwest last week, and she said, oh, I thought it was my daddy. I'm like, oh.
Did they get
rough
hands?
Oh, hell no.
I do a lot of self-repair and DIY projects.
Pain's got it going on.
Yeah, I don't do any of that.
You guys don't either.
Well, I do. Well, I'm very handy around the house, but I keep it very limited in terms of what I do. And I wear gloves. Yeah. I wear gloves to everything.
You wear gloves?
Yeah.
Do you put like that nice shea butter inside when you so it can kind of moisturize as you do that?
Right, as I'm doing a DIY.
Yeah. Yeah, you could never hold a wrench.
That's
not going to work.
Yeah. I prefer the drill. The power drill to the wrench, or the screwdriver when I can use it. Because sometimes the screwdriver can sort of hurt when you're moving the thing.
And then your wrist gets tired.
Yeah, your wrist, right. And then you're like, how many times do I have to turn this thing?
Work smarter, not harder. Folks.
Yeah, that's the way I look
Anna,
at it.
Anna, what do you think happened to him over the weekend?
Something.
Something.
And it was
traumatic,
more than the winds, because those scared the bejesus out of a lot of us.
I bet he wasn't out on his precious deck this weekend.
No, I wouldn't have been. I heard the stuff moving around. I said, I'm just going to leave that for another day. I'll do clean up. I'm not going to do anything proactive here.
You know how your dog's hair gets matted back when they stand in the window and love the wind blowing in?
Yes.
Well, it was not only matted back. There was a look of terror on the look of my... I was afraid the little one would be blown over to Michigan this weekend, little Maddie.
Were they running around or just sort of standing in fear?
Well, they,
how did they tell
they kind of stopped and said, what in God's name is going on here?
Good question.
Right.
Yeah, I know. And then the wind chill starts to hit you. It hit me sooner than it did them. I didn't put gloves on. I had them in my pockets. That was awful. And then driving in the car later in the day, it's kind of bouncing around and all. We had semis flipped. 40-foot pine trees came down in places. It was pretty amazing.
Railroad crossing near me that had blown up to the point where it was damaged, and they had to bring all the police presence in until they could secure that again.
That's interesting. And I'll tell you what else is going on. We're getting more and more pictures from the upper Midwest. They have had a snow season up in upper Michigan, northern Wisconsin, the likes of which they've not seen in years. They literally have snowdrifts. in parts of Minnesota that were 20, 25 feet high. And they got snowdrifts up in upper Michigan up to the roofs up there. People are literally tunneling out of their houses. It's reminiscent of some of these snow years that were written about back in the 1800s up there. So it's been quite a... We've been lucky, relatively speaking, compared to what's going on. And then there's flooding south of us. But I almost hate to address what seems to be coming this weekend, because Anna, you better have extra medication ready for him.
Oh, no, I heard it.
Yeah. He was already complaining about it, Tom.
Yeah, I heard what you said.
I know.
And it's
stunning.
I'm not only deeply offended by it, but...
And you know that matters in the natural world.
Yes.
Whether or not we're offended by what Mother Nature does to us.
I'm deeply offended by what Mother Nature is doing here. Because even the team likes to stay on a text chain even when we're not... We love each other all so much that we just spend all day long texting each other when we're not talking.
That ought to rub some calluses, you know? I mean...
No, I wear gloves I wear texting gloves.
Okay.
And I have a very soft screen touch. I think that's...
Wow. I thought you have the fingerless gloves. Those aren't working for you this...
Oh yeah, I do have those, but I also moisturize my fingers.
I was going to say,
I don't want them in any way to be.
Of course not.
Yeah,
You're probably rubbing.
I'm telling you, man. It was really. I swear to God, when this girl said this to me, it was years ago. Not that many years ago, but years ago, and she said to me, she goes, "What? Your hands are so soft." And then generally, I guess if you said that, if a guy said that to a woman, that'd be a complimentary thing.
That's something you'd never want to hear.
Right, and I was like, "Oh, thank you," because that is not a compliment.
There's a handful of things. If you're a guy, you never want to hear what I say to you.
Well, I suppose if you're a brain surgeon or something, you got soft hands, right? But
An infielder, they like to say he's got soft hands, right? Or a wide receiver,
right?
But they don't mean that his hands are really soft. They just mean he's good at receiving.
Well, you're a journalist, and you've got to have fingers that work properly at
there
the keyboard.
You go.
You know, so
oh boy,
that's devastating. Yeah, if a girl says to you, "Wow, you have very soft hands," you immediately go to the gym, start doing push-ups or something,
right? I take a Brillo pad and I just start working on
the where you go in.
SOS scraping pad. All over
Perhaps I am moisturizing too much. I just don't know.
Oh, gosh.
Another admission.
Oh, gee. This is too much.
It really is.
I think you're oversharing officially at this moment. I really do.
I like this, but there's something to throw today on this Monday. What else do you want to reveal today, Ron?
I'm curious what's behind all this.
What about your feet? Are they moisturized?
My feet are... No, I don't think they're moisturized as much as they should be.
Pedicured?
I would like to... No.
I will tell you.
I'm calloused at the bottom of my feet.
I will tell you, the last 5 years or so, I'm amazed by how many men I see in the manicure pedicure places.
I love that.
I do too.
Please,
I love it too.
Before you start wearing the flip flops, guys.
Yeah, just get just
sandals,
do something.
Walking, whatever those trainers are.
Right.
Please.
Right. Exactly.
I don't wear those. I wear formal shoes to the beach.
Velvet slippers.
Did you ever see those pictures of Richard Nixon walking up and down the beach in a suit?
No.
That's me.
Yeah.
That's me.
You know, we went down to shoot a piece on hurricanes one time, and this was back in the era when we carried all that equipment, 400 pounds of audio gear, not to mention the video. So I was busy trying to help our guys out. I grabbed, and I left my suit suitcase on the plane. So I had only what I was wearing, which was, at the time, a suit coat with vest. And we had to go out and do some man and woman on the beach interviews. You know, have you ever seen a hurricane? Anything like this? What would you do if one was coming? And this guy from England looked at me, and he said, do you Americans always go to the beach in your suit coats?
Formal clothing.
Yeah. And I looked at him and perfectly seriously said, yeah, we do. and he looked at me quizzically and not wanting to be rude to, somebody in the country he was visiting. He said, oh, okay. But I thought it was a perfectly reasonable question because I looked like an idiot out there on the beach. And,
I would have said to him, Tom, I would have said, hey, listen, well, for us, you'd be speaking German to me right now, pal. Get out of here. Get out of here.
I'll tell you. So believe me, Ro, I can identify with what you said, walking with formal shoes on the beach.
I just walk with full formal. Full formality at all times.
Yeah.
I don't like the open toe. I think the sandals are very uncomfortable, quite honestly.
So what do you wear? What do you wear, really, like in the summer on the beach? If you don't have the sandals on or the flip-flops, what is there?
I wear like tennis shoes. Like, light Then I take them off. And
sandals are, you'd find sandals comfortable, though, if they fit right. I bought a pair that started slicing into my feet, and that was bad.
That thing with the little nubby thing in between your, your big toe and your little and your next toe in. Yeah. See, now that's, to me, that's like a torture device. I've given it all up at Guantanamo.
I'm 100% with you. I haven't worn sandals probably since I was a child. I don't do sandals. Never.
Yeah. Well, the sandals I'm talking about are not those little flip-flop-like things. I'm talking about the nice ones, you know, where you get...
like Roman sandals go all the way up to your knees?
European
sandals that you wear with black socks all the way up to your knees?
Yeah, it's not like that, but I... You know, they're designed for some degree of comfort, and they actually are comfortable if you get the right...
I have these rubber, like Adidas flip-flop kind of sandals that you're wearing around the beach, like the pool or something like that.
Yeah.
But I only wear that just to get from the 15 feet at a time, right? It's not as though I'm not going to go out. I see all kinds of bros doing that, where they're walking around and the flip flops up and down Michigan Avenue, and they think it's like cool, and it's not. It's not.
Not a good look.
It's not a good look with in the summer, the rolled up sleeve shirts, and then unbuttoned to their navel, and everybody's perfectly tan, and then they're wearing like really expensive shorts, and then flip flops. You're like, are you an idiot? Yeah. And I'm wearing a 3-piece suit like Tom.
Yeah, you know, yeah, right. That's what you're supposed to wear. Yeah. Seersucker.
Mm-hmm. Well, when we went down into that eclipse last year, I mean, it was so god-awful hot down there. Mm. I don't think I've ever been so hot in my life. I don't know how our crew did it. They would pop me in the car for 10 minutes to air condition and hopefully dry out a little bit, before we went on the air. But I knew I was going to perspire, and I didn't want that showing up on the shirt during a live shot, so I wore a little open sport coat, which was horrible, but at least it hid the fact that I was drenched.
Yeah.
People were calling and saying, what's he wearing that coat for? And I could understand it.
I don't think that's what they were calling about, actually, at the end of that.
You were crying, and it made us all cry, too, Tom.
It was one of the most, one of the greatest television moments in Chicago history.
Absolutely.
Oh, I was so embarrassed.
It was
by
a beautiful moment.
But I'll tell you, we literally had equipment fail on that. And, we had undergone such a lovely, cool summer up here. And we've been looking at that on the weather maps down there, but to experience was something. Yeah, that was an amazing experience. I didn't expect to break down during that, but I was so embarrassed. And yet people came up and said, we like that. And I was very surprised.
Well, it was a moving moment, and just hearing your commentary about it, but then also how you were emotionally moved by it, too, is just more than I could handle. And I think I'm just like, pass the dishes. This is terrible.
Well, isn't that amazing? Because, it's something you never mean to do. And I was amazed at how people seemed to be able to identify with it. It was an incredible experience. There's going to be another one in 2024, and you can see it from roughly the same location. This last one, went from the eclipse went from the Pacific Northwest through southern Midwest and down to South Carolina. The next one will go from like El Paso, Texas, up to Toronto. But 2024, if you're down in Carbondale,
go right through again.
Yeah, it'll go through again. So,
well, it's interesting because that part of the world. It's thousands of years that part of the world has been a population center. Mm-hmm. The Cahokia Mounds are down there. The First Nations here in this area. I always think about like a weekend like this last weekend and like now this upcoming week of horror. I always think to myself, what were they thinking? All of the tribes that were here, I'm like, did you not know about Florida? Did you not know? It was like, what were you thinking? Why would you stay if you didn't have to stay? Why? Just keep moving. But you get down to, like, southern Illinois, the mounds down there, which are very, very, it's a very complicated society. This was not just a simple hunting, foraging, outpost, which, some of the further north you got, it turned into a little bit more of that. I mean, these were basically cities down there for thousands of years. I get that's a little further south, but here in Chicago... I mean, you go to the old Chicago History Museum, and they had of natural the Chicago, the one that was on Clark Street, North, the just
North off, and Clark.
Right. Yeah. No, further.
Chicago History Museum?
No, that's the, yeah, oh. That's the History Museum at North and Clark. But if you went further north, up to Armitage, where Armitage T-Bone's in, there was a Chicago Museum of Natural History.
Oh.
And you could go in and they did a diorama where you walked into it and what it was like here. A thousand How years ago or a couple thousand years ago, and then they had one that was like 10,000 years ago.
Ooh. Well, you know, that area is beautiful down there. And you know what I found out was a lot of the lakes down in the southern Midwest were produced during the CCC, the Conservation Corps program that was set up by Roosevelt, or not Roosevelt, back in World War II.
Roosevelt.
Yeah. I was right. Yeah.
FDR is supposed to
FDR. Yeah. Yeah. And he set those up. I didn't realize that. A lot of them were, they dammed up rivers. These became lakes. And we, of course, see them as lakes today. But we were on the banks of one of them for that eclipse. Another thing you find out is there's so much beautiful terrain down there. It's heavily wooded, gently rolling, that there are a lot of places. I kept looking for all the people that I figured would be down there looking for the eclipse. And I didn't see huge numbers of them. We were in a trailer, a campground, which was crowded with people, a lot of them from Chicago. But there's so many places to duck in down there and just kind of privately view it. And then the next day when we were coming back, we stopped for some breakfast, and there were lines at all the restaurants, you know, waiting to get in there. And you realized all the people had come out of their little hiding places there where they had watched the eclipse and were starting to trek back north again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you realized there were a lot more people there than you realized.
Right.
But, that's pretty
it's interesting part of the world. And for those who are historians or anthropologists, archaeologists, who want to go down and do so, there's a lot of really rich area down there for exploration and for science.
Yeah.
I know that we don't believe in any of that anymore, but if we did, you could dig stuff up. No. And it's interesting, they've found ancient Aztec currency.
Interesting.
In the Cahokia Mountains. Yeah.
Wow.
That's crazy. Yeah.
That is crazy. Well, you know, I remember from climatology course where they looked at the development of the human species and all, and they found a lot of development went on in the mid-latitudes. And they figured part of the reason for that was, and when they were in the lower latitudes, say down in Mexico or San, they were in mountains, you know, where the temperatures and the climate was more temperate. But they said they figured a lot of the reason for that was whatever skill it took to produce food and to save it over the months where you didn't have food production going because of winter contributed to other developments.
So more sophisticated shelter, more sophisticated food storage, more sophisticated transportation. Had to be available. And so the Aztecs were, the theory is that had Europeans not made it to the shores, if they'd made it 100 years later, right, if we're 1592 as opposed to 1492, you know, the ocean blue wouldn't have been a lot of, but you know.
Yes. Sail the ocean blue.
Uh-huh. that most of the, what is now the United States would have been Aztec.
Isn't that interesting? That's fascinating.
So they weren't scared off by the weather.
No, they liked it. They were getting out of Mexico. They were like, you know, it's hot down here.
Very hot.
We are coming up. I love it in southern Illinois. It's gorgeous. We don't call it Illinois, but you know what I mean.
We're going to summer up there.
There's a big river there. They call it the Mississippi, but it's not the Mississippi. And it's nice when we get on. It's beautiful. We get everywhere from it. It's lovely.
Yeah.
All right. Thank God that we're done with this conversation.
It's been a very unique one, Ro, and I think these insights into your, your thoughts on yourself have been fascinating. I'm not sure what precipitated
it. I don't know either.
It's been fascinating.
Yeah, I don't know if it is. All I got to say is it's been a scary weekend. I've done a lot of evaluating, Tom.
Have you?
Yeah.
By the way, what'd you guys think of the Oscars without a host?
I didn't, I was worried that I would just hate it, and I didn't miss it.
Yeah.
I did not miss the host.
Did you hate it?
Yeah, I hated it.
I thought it was very interesting. It went better than I thought it was going to.
You know what?
Shorter.
It was shorter. That's true.
That's about
25 to 30 minutes shorter on average, which is what they were trying to get to.
Yeah.
But they could make that happen in a different way, too. That's how they would have to require to do some of those things off, you know, like...
Yeah,
not doing a separate award ceremony.
Well, you know what you didn't hear last night? There were no orchestra you know, musical beds telling you, hey, you're done. You know,
there were some.
They cut a couple mics, too, when, like, the third person of the receiving of the Oscar team decided to step up.
I saw one segment like that,
But they don't. See, the thing is, here's where they ran into a problem. First of all, the Oscars, do you realize this, Tom? That the Oscars are the oldest award that is not given by a government in the United States.
No.
And it is second only, the oldest not given by a government for domestic purposes is the Nobel Prize.
Wow.
So
very interesting.
It's so it goes back. I mean, it's almost 100 years old, the Oscar. So 90 years old this year.
Wow.
It is a really, it's an important and esteemed thing. And a situation like this should have a host, and people should proudly want to do it. And we just live in such a messed up situation now with social media that people are afraid to do it because, oh, my, what if I say something wrong? I'm like, yeah, I just talked about having too soft of hands. You can get away with it. It's fine. Just go do good. And there should be, because what you saw happen was when you'd be in between things, like in between an event, they weren't going to a commercial break.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They'd take a wide shot and nothing would happen. They never thought out. I cannot believe that the Academy and the TV producers didn't foresee these awkward stalls because people didn't know where to go. They didn't know how to get off. And you need a host then you go to in a, you know, in a home base or a secondary base situation. You're in television, you get this.
Mm-hmm.
But you go all over to somebody else who's going to get you ready while the stage is getting cleared or moved and you're getting people away so that the thing just keeps flowing. You don't have to have a 30-minute open with a host. The way they did it with Tina Fey, they could have just had those three stay and host and do the interstitial kind of moments in between just so to keep it moving.
Well, that's it. I guess what surprised me was there weren't more awkward moments than...
Me too.
You know, I kind of expected that would be the entire show, and it really wasn't. I was looking at the overnights, too. They did a bang up there.
Did they?
Oh, a heck of a rating. I think they had like a 22 rating or something like that. I don't know how that compares to past ones.
That's a big
but
number.
But that's a big number locally.
I thought it was bad to tease us, though, with the Tina Fey, the Amy Poehler, and the Maya Rudolph. The three people I would actually love to see as hosts, even together, any combination thereof.
Yeah.
And then they came out, and you sort of thought, wait, maybe. And then they kind of went away.
Right.
Come back, please.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been nice just to get them through. And then you also want somebody to make a reference to something goofy that happens, right? I mean, there were some goofy things that happened last night.
Mm-hmm. I bet you're right. So the best hosts of all can string all that together. It's not all prepared. They ad-lib it, and they make it sound, they make it seem fun. They make light of those moments.
In one sentence.
In
right?
one sentence.
And they just move on. And
segue perfectly.
Yeah.
But the bad ones sound more like they're just doing their prepared bits in between things, and it's also incongruous.
So I should be doing it. I just I'll volunteer.
You should do it. You can wear your man's
bangs. That would be great.
You can wear my man's bangs.
Oh, yeah, on the outside of your clothes.
My soft hands.
Your moisturized hands. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. and your gloves so that when you shake people's hands, you won't have to worry about getting their germs.
That's it.
Excuse me, Spike Lee. I'd just like to say that my hands are a little soft, and I'm very sorry.
Shea butter.
I hope. I you do seem a little drunk, though, which is nice.
Have another glass.
Wow.
Let's all enjoy.
Yeah.
Anyway. It was an interesting night. I think they should have had a host. But it was pretty fascinating. You know, it was like I know we have to run. I don't even know if we have to run because we're on the web. I don't know what we have to do or we don't have to do.
Well, Tom might need to run.
Yeah, you probably have a job to go do, Tom.
Yeah, I've got a couple of, you know, like about 1,300 graphics to get.
Yeah, why don't you go do that?
So, I love talking to you guys. I've actually been waiting to hear what you guys had to say about that. I wanted to hear what you and Anna had to
say. At 6 o'clock, Mr. Roper will be here.
We'll discuss it again.
In-depth discussion about this. People are all mad about the Green Book winning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, wow. Mm-hmm. This was, you know, remember Oscars So White? There was a whole hashtag movement.
That many years ago.
A couple years ago. Mm-hmm. There were too many, too white in the Oscars.
So white.
And it's, you know, last night was a show in complete diversity,
absolutely.
Right? I mean, it was in terms of the nominees, in terms of the winners, in terms of the presentation itself.
Performers, everybody.
Right, all of it. And it was, you know, it only took a couple of years for the Academy to adjust to that criticism. And there was great product, too. I mean, it was a landmark
here.
Black Panther was great. Black Klansman was better, though. Black Klansman was a great, great film. And I kind of hoped when he won for the best script that they were going to win. He was going to win for director too.
You sort of felt that
special movie
didn't happen.
Yeah, gets a little heavy-handed at the end, but it is really, really, really. The acting was great, and the soundtrack was amazing. It is a totally interesting, entertaining, beautifully acted, beautifully directed film, and it should. And I'm really happy for him because he does have an honorary Oscar, which they must have given him when all of the criticism came up about it. Oscar's so white. Hey, give Spike Lee an honorary
Where
Oscar.
Where is he?
Spike Lee, get something to him. But you know, to win a competitive Oscar means all the world to a director Spike, you know, because so many of the greats never won one. Mm. Right? When you think about it.
You know,
Hitchcock never won one.
And he's one of the greats.
I was down for an Easter service at Father Flager's church. And Spike Lee was there. It was when they were scoping out the air. We didn't know it at the time for Chirac.
Yeah.
Nice guy. Very
he's
nice.
He's very nice. And he's he's super philosophical.
Yeah.
He would love that conversation about the Cahokia Mounds earlier. He would he would have really
loved it.
Sure.
Yeah. But he is he's very nice. He's so incredibly dedicated to the idea of filmmaking and film history and stuff like that. You could discuss anything with him about world cinema. It's pretty amazing. And it was a great moment. He was a little drunk. He got a little mad. But I do like when he did. He's like Jack Nicholson now. You know, like Jack Nicholson used to sit in the front row and somebody'd say something and he'd make a funny face. Yeah. That's kind of what we have now with Spike Lee. God bless you, Spike.
Yeah.
He's earned it.
Yeah. He'd always certainly have.
I should say.
Inside Man is the best bank heist movie of all times, and that is a great genre. It's got you've got Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, you got Bonnie and Clyde, you got a Dog Day Afternoon, and I to this day will tell you that and those are all great films, 4-star films, all the ones I just mentioned, and Inside Man is even better than those. Wow. And it's hard to imagine like a statement like that, but Inside Man is all of his work. From stem to stern. And I also want to say, Kevin and I talked about this. We squeezed out a little tear during the Lady Gaga.
Oh, during the song? The actual performance last night. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was
big
moment.
By the way, I saw that movie after you guys talked
about it.
Did you?
It was very good. I'm not going to tell you it's the best thing I ever saw.
It wasn't like the Streisand concert?
No. Well, that's on a whole different level. And Barbara was on last night.
Yes.
You
know,
I just looked at
Spike. Did you see Spike? There were like two old ladies sitting right there between Spike and Barbara Streisand looking at each other.
I bet you Spike has shed a tear or two at a Barbara Streisand concert.
Sure.
Right. Right.
She's in Evergreen? Yeah.
So, exactly.
All right.
So you have soft, uncalloused, moisturized hands, and you're crying at Barbara Streisand.
And I want to say something else.
And I'm about as bad, too.
Well, you know what you just did, though? You know, your man card went up just a little bit by saying, Star Spawn's okay. Yeah, it's okay. It's nice. Yeah, I mean, Kevin and I are still talking about the moments.
Well, the acting was spectacular.
Amazing.
Oh. It really was.
Unbelievable.
I think the only reason I qualify what I say about it. It's sad.
Well, it's got a movie. It's got a twist. All of the movies, the entire genre's got the same thing happened in it.
It's very true.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. We got to go.
All right.
I think Tom has to go too.
I don't know if we do, but we will.
Well,
anyway.
You know, if we keep going, we can join
set a record
and bring the TV audience in on this too. Right. We'll just continue the conversation at 5.
And we'll head back to the radio audience at some point.
Yeah,
I don't know when or how we're going to do that. What inning are we in right now?
Bottom of the seventh.
All right.
Oh, we're getting closer.
Still not there. Yet.
Yeah. All right, Tom.
A pleasure.
Thanks. Bye.
Happy Monday, guys.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks, Tom.
New Metro.
All right.
See you, Anna.
Thanks, Tom.
Do you
bye,
have
Kevin.
That?
See you, Tom.
Your car sound effect, because I think that's what Tom just did. He's like, bye, finally, bye.
It's kind of nice being on the stream, though. We're in no hurry. You take your time.
Tom was like, I gotta be somewhere. I gotta go.
I know that's not it. Hold on. No, that's not it.
You know, they took, away
here's
on
what happened. I'll tell you what happened. They
climate
took,
change.
They took my little, this is a box with a bunch of buttons on it, and there's like a little piece of paper that goes over the top.
Yeah,
it tells
like
me what's on everything.
See, now you gotta guess.
Well, we were at the United Center on Friday, and our producer was fell ill, and he has it at his house. So I have no idea what these buttons do. So
just hit them all. See what happens.
That's not it.
No, that's not how it exists.
I love that one.
Oh, yeah. That one.
Got it.
Yeah. I was like,
it's like a game show. It's like, press a button and see what happens.
Awesome. Number two.
See? That's not it. All right.
Yeah? What trouble?
I'll tell you right now. There is...
Where do you see trouble, Rob?
On the...
You're worrying Anna. She's like, what? What's
I know,
wrong?
I'm like, come on. I know he's a panicker, and a lot of times these things amount to nothing, but sometimes I am concerned.
I'm just telling you that there's trouble if you are Robert Kraft.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Well, I think it's kind of a problem for the entire NFL.
Bobby K, as he's known in his circle.
Bobby K.
Hey, geez. Bobby K, Frankie V. Want to go to the Orchids?
Want to go over by Orchids? Want to go over by them?
Shows up in a chauffeured Bentley, it turns out, the weekend of the AFC Championship. Visited twice.
And in less than 24 hours.
Ring. Yeah, right. Yeah,
does he go to the early bird special for $49.95 in his Bentley? I mean, do you do that when you show up in a Bentley?
It just gets worse.
Get the doggy bag to take home.
Don't say no. That's extra. That's what it is.
Yeah, and then God. There's the reports out there that multiple women he had. That was what he was paying for.
Paying for what? Can you clarify?
Multiple
that?
Women at one time.
Oh.
That's about as far as we're going to go on that one.
Bob K is a freak, huh? Classic Bobby K.
Come on. Although, you know, he's one of those guys. He's like a littler guy, right?
Uh-huh.
Who wears, he's got the vest, he dresses like me as such. He's got the fancy jeans, skinny jeans.
Yeah.
He's got...
Well, he wears the cool gym shoes, too.
Cool gym shoes, right, and he's got a vest and, you know, like a sweater underneath it. Right. And he's, you know, dancing around, and he's like, yeah, I'm still young. I'm still young.
Yeah, he was dancing with Cardi B at the Super Bowl party.
77 years old. Yep. All of them out there on the dance floor.
Yep.
Good for him.
Two visits to the spa in less than 24 hours. He still got it.
Two visits to the spa.
He calls it a false rumor.
Well, this is the AFC.
There is attorney, fake. Even though there's videotape.
So this is a classic.
Here's
and then he'll apologize eventually.
Well, here's the issue with this whole thing. While the charges themselves could add up to what? Community service, many might say, right? It just looks bad. It's embarrassing as hell. There's so much here.
Lawyers say to me, hey, listen, don't worry about it. It's not murder one.
That one can go away. It faces up to a year in prison, like unlikely anyone will face that. But here's the issue. You could argue that those videotapes could be FOIA'd by reporters.
Oh, boy.
And so, I mean, it's, you know, that's...
Oh, I don't know.
Well, it's been out there. And the reporters are already talking about it, that this is a possibility in a case like this. So it seems that he might want to really cooperate.
Right.
And really, really, really just kind of go ahead and figure something out.
But they could be FOIA'd under any circumstance.
Yeah, but potentially, unless there's some kind of ruling that the judge thinks that they cannot be released. But
FOIA'd means...
Freedom of Information Act.
Right, using the Freedom of Information Act to gain access. And anybody can do that. But in a criminal case like this, because of the nature, then, Your Honor, please, due to the graphic nature of the alleged offense and the video therein, I would not be in the public interest or the interest of my client to necessarily put his shortcomings on display.
Yeah, I don't
forthwith.
We don't need to see that.
And I'm just saying, talking about embarrassment for the NFL, right. Embarrassment for the Patriots, embarrassment for him, and it just feels as if I don't know how much he wants to fight it.
I thought we were going to get other big names over the weekend, and we didn't get it.
I know, it didn't happen.
I was so excited about that.
There was another billionaire that came out. He was a Republican donor, who's also a neighbor of Robert Kraft. Visited around the same time. They carpooled. Oh, gosh.
Oh, no.
That's not true.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Hello, Bobby K. What you say we carpool over to the Orchids?
Would you like some Grey Poupon?
Oh, jeez.
I've got to go to the loo.
Yeah, I don't understand. I don't get it, man.
Pulled up in the blue Bentley at 11 a.m. You're right, Ro.
The blue Bentley.
Early bird special.
Right, and they were at, right, 11 a.m. That's before 1:30, we learned, is the early bird special. So it's $49.95. You're in, you're out. right? Does he say to his buddy, "Hey, how long is this going to take you? Because I got an AFC Championship game to get to."
Yeah, a little morning trip to the Orchids of Ace Spa, and then he's stressed.
He's not playing.
No, but he's stressed, but he's worried about his team.
That was a stressful game, too. Yeah. So then he had to go back there to relieve the
stress. Yeah, right. And he's probably saying to Ming Fu Hu Hu, little Ming Fu Hu Hu, that she's the madam of this thing, right?
Right, she's been arrested.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, oh, Ming, I don't know why he sounds like Trump to me. He doesn't sound like Trump. He's kind of almost got a New York kind of a thing going.
Yeah.
Sort of.
He's a bigger voice for kind of a slighter man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's sort of like, oh, you can't believe how hard this game was, oh, Ming Fu Hu. Thank you. Thanks for being here for me, because I'm so stressed, I don't know what to do.
It's like therapy.
Yeah.
So aren't there league conduct rules, though, Kev? I mean, the players have that. Do the owners have that as well?
Own the league.
Yeah, I know, but look at this.
What are they going to do? You're
what
suspended
an embarrassment.
2 games, Robert. You got to stay home or watch it from the spa. You can't actually come to the stadium.
I don't imagine the spa has a really good TV. No. I imagine that's like in a corner, like an old, right, 9-inch with a bubble screen kind of a thing.
The antennas.
Yeah.
Probably like my nail salon. It always has Keeping Up with the Kardashians on a loop.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Or you're just looking at the closed circuit television of the cashier.
Oh, right. Oh, gee,
all time.
Even worse.
Yeah.
The music.
Oh, Ming Fu Hu, I gotta tell you something. I get a little bit of a kick. Hold on, my shoulder. Let me. You can get. Oh, get in deep there. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's it.
Police report doesn't say anything about the shoulder.
All right, I gotta get on my back now. Let's make this fast.
These pills are wearing off.
Oh, God.
I know. I don't want to say. I think it's an embarrassment for the league.
Yeah.
You know what? I mean, is it though?
I do. Because, I don't know. It's just another billionaire behaving badly in some ways. But
it's not that bad.
I think when you look at the background of this being a sex, like, you know, they were held in servitude.
I'm like Kevin, wade out into the ocean here. Go ahead, Kev. Keep wading out there.
Never mind.
You're going to learn a little something here, Kev. You're going to learn something
about
being a middle-aged man. See, you're a young man now. You're able to
there's
around.
Nothing wrong.
Under 30, he's able to get along with this. Like, what is wrong with all your friends and maybe the girls in your life? What's wrong with this? I'm telling you, you're going to run into a buzzsaw of women who are going to stop and say to you, "What, are you kidding me?"
If there's like a high paid escort or even an escort in general, you could say that you could tell yourself the story. They're not forced into it; it's of their own will, and that you know who there's really no victim here, and they're exchanging. It's a business. As long as they're not
treated
right, you could tell yourself the story. But this wasn't that case. This was a case where these women's passports are being taken. They were lured here under the false pretense of a job, a legitimate job.
Of course,
they could send money home, and they're being held here against their will.
I'm going to guess that Robert Kraft has the same amount of empathy that like Donald Trump has about these kinds of things, and probably never thought of it for a second because he didn't think. I would imagine that most of the customers don't realize exactly what's going on there, or if they have been told, they don't believe it, and they're like, okay, whatever. They're not thinking about that because that's not part of the presentation. They don't take them back to a cage and go pick one, right?
No, you've been to the nail salons and you've even talked about it before. And I've been to the nail salons. I'm not talking about massage parlors, but nail salons.
If your nail salons had cages in the back.
No, not cages, but you can tell sometimes when there are some people when it's all immigrants and they don't speak the language and it feels a little bit like they're being told what to do and talked to in a way that doesn't seem respectful. And to me, it's like, I don't go to those nail salons anymore. And I think there is often, you don't want to know is really the answer to that. You kind of do know. You sort of get the vibe that something's weird around what's going on there, but you don't care.
But if this is happening in nail salons too, I mean, should they be cracking down on those?
Of course. If they're being brought here and their passports being taken and they're being forced to work and probably in who knows what conditions?
Well, now you put it that way.
Or in restaurants. There are restaurants. There's some, I would imagine, probably some in Chicago. But I know when you get out into the true heartland of America and you're, like, driving down a highway and there's nothing else out there and you happen to go by, like, an Asian restaurant. Like, it says Chinese food on the restaurant. You're like, how the hell did they do that out here?
Right.
Right?
And what's that all about?
That is about human trafficking in some cases.
Mm.
And I wouldn't say all, because then I'll get sued. But in many.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question is, and there's, you know, a bunch of people living in a house and how they get there, and the people who came in on container ships, not through the southern border. Although Donald Trump did today say that 90% of the drugs don't come in through the ports of entry. They come in through, you know, sneaking across the border.
Across the border.
Which there's not a single shred of evidence to prove that, but it didn't matter. He was going out there. Imagine that Kim Jong-un sit down though right now.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Just right as he's about to do that. Kim Jong, do you know Ming Fu Hu? Remember, he thinks anybody who looks alike knows it. Remember he told April Ryan, asked if April Ryan knew any of the people at the... what was that about? I can't remember. It was a Congressional Black Caucus. Or whatever. Oh, yeah. Why don't you go ahead and ask? You know those people.
Because you're African American.
You're one of those people. And he could do the same thing with Kim Jong-un. Do you know Ming Fu Hu? Amazing.
She does incredible work.
Oh, my. Oh, the best. Bobby Case, where's Beyer?
Bobby Case.
How tight are they, the Trump and the Robert
very,
Kraft, right?
They're very, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Frankie V and Bobby K, the whole gang.
Sometimes Frankie V does join us in the blue Bentley. We like to joke, blue pill, blue Bentley. All right, it's time to go now. It might be time to go, period. I don't, you know, they should not let us on the web here. Whatever
this is. It's dangerous. Yeah. It's very dangerous.
Thanks, Kev, for making me sound reasonable,
Kevin.
Though. I really appreciate this.
Oh, man.
All right. You got to forgive him. He's a young man. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Con Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on WGN Everywhere. Joining the radio audience coming up in about, what inning are we in?
Bottom of the ninth.
Any minute now. I'll be joining the radio audience. So maybe we'll just hold here for a second. First of all, a clarification.
Yeah.
Correction. It's actually Ming Fu Lu. Ming Fu Lu is the proprietor, allegedly, of the Orchid of Asia.
I think that part's not alleged. She's the owner, operator.
Right, but I was saying Ming Fu Hu. So I just want to make sure that anybody named Ming Fu Hu is not...
should not contact you. That was a mistaken
sort of thing. It was a slip of the tongue out of the heart.
Oh.
As we like to say, which is also extra at the Orchids of Asia.
Oh, God. Thanks for clearing that up, Ro. You made it much better in your clarification,
yes.
I think.
Pretty much it's on the menu.
That's the Bobby K special.
I think, Bobby asked for a specific set of circumstances to take place there. And
give me the Bobby K special.
It was one of the reporters today who said this was happening all under law enforcement's nose. And I thought, that's extra, too.
It's just supposedly under surveillance for 6 months, and they have multiple videotapes of multiple acts. And there's going to be, it's going to be hard to wiggle out of that.
Extra again.
That's what she says.
Again, all on the menu.
It's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
It is.
I guess it's not that unbelievable to think a bunch of old rich white guys were seeking this stuff out. But
it's just what
the Oscars? All night, let's say the Oscars, it was, what's wrong with these rich white guys?
I know.
You know who the rich white guys are? The guys who paid for your movie. That's who those guys are. They're not the audience. There was a moment where I was literally looking at the audience, and it was so diverse and so angry at times. There were moments where I'm watching it, and I'm thinking to myself, watch the producers are all talking to each other like, when did this start? Holy crap!
When did this start? Well, yeah.
Where's the John Wayne movie? You know what I need right now, don't you? A little massage and relaxation.
Call Bobby King.
Well, even Chris Evans got in trouble because he helped Regina King to the stage.
Did you see that? What is going on? Social media, and I didn't even raise, I had no problem with that.
He was just sort of putting his arm out to sort of help her, because when you're a woman wearing a beautiful gown,
what's wrong with that?
Those steps can be daunting. And I think he was just helping. Yeah, I really, and people say, well, that's not equality.
But, but you know what I learned is? Menstrual equality. I learned about that last night. You learned more about what a period piece really is. Yes, thank you. Oh, my God.
I did not know about that documentary until last night.
There's a menstrual equality documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And they won.
It's a short.
It won for an Oscar. And it was actually, basically, I had no idea either, but the people were so excited about their documentary that they made. You know, it's always the documentarians who get up there.
Passionate people.
And they get, and it's because they're so surprised that they ever won an Oscar. Especially the short documentary, because it's like, you could like do 7 minutes, right? And that's and that's a documentary.
You don't really go into that thinking Oscar. Right.
And it was menstrual equality.
Well, I was like, is this real? This is a problem? I didn't realize that was such a major issue that a documentary needed to be made about, but...
I can't believe a film about menstruation just won an Oscar. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you.
And if you want to read more about it, the New York Times has Why Periods Are Political.
Mm-hmm.
Opinion piece today.
Right, and then again, like all the heads of the studios,
like what is
especially the old heads of the studios are no longer there, but they're still around.
Well,
right?
Did you notice the contrast between the In Memoriam and then the what?
The only old white men you saw at all were In Memoriam last night. You didn't see any old white men on stage. You only saw them In Memoriam. And then the one guy who came out who like runs the academy, you know, talking about something.
Yeah.
And I'm almost like, arrest that man!
What is he doing? Who allowed him on stage?
The white man on the stage.
He's gotten past security! He's not being, he is not actually being attended to at the moment! Security! There is not an African American or Asian woman with him! Stop him!
That shouldn't be allowed.
Sort of felt that way, though.
It sort of felt he stood out in a way that I'm sure it used to be the opposite, right? I mean, he's like, wait a minute.
Right. I finally had a great moment last night. I'm like, I know what it's like to be black in America. You're like watching an awards show and you're like, this isn't about me. What is this about?
Uh-huh. Yep.
Yeah. There you go.
Anyway.
Although I do have to, I stood up for the art, though. I mean, although I love the fact that Green Book is the most controversial choice. Because it does have a black man in it, but he's not the lead actor, and it's the white man who saves him. Which is not really what happens in that movie, but whatever.
You mean real life was not what happened? What it was
period. Even in the movie, it's not. That's not
I didn't
really
see that one.
Sort of. It becomes like a buddy. You know, two opposites. That's the oldest. You know, other than A Star Is Born, it's the oldest formula in Hollywood. Is that two opposites have to get together in a road picture and find a way
to get along
with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's 48 hours, except the opposite. It's kind of like 48 hours, except the guy is a musical genius and not Eddie Murphy. That's the only thing that really is the difference.
Yeah. And that he was the one of position of power, the black man, right? Isn't that he was the musician and it was his driver?
Right. It was his driver. Right. It was helping him in the South because the South was a bunch of, you know, Jim Crow crackers. Which, by the way, they were serving last night at the bar, the Oscars. Spike Lee, all the Jim Crow crackers along with whatever the strongest liquor is that you have.
Yeah, the knock I heard on Green Book, and I haven't seen it, is just that you heard actor after actor, director after director saying, well, I'm not sure that it was just a overly simplistic look at racial tolerance, that the way they interacted, the way the story was presented, that is just sort of a comfortable way to discuss race. So, I don't know. That's why people...
Oh, we should always make race uncomfortable to discuss, because it's gotten us so far.
Well, Get Out was pretty darn uncomfortable, and that was, you know, commentary. Same thing.
All right.
It's been a great movie. That was. I'm not sure I need to see Green Book, but I do have to catch up on my Oscars movies.
They're all really good.
Yeah.
That's why they get nominated.
Did you
enjoy
Green Book?
Yeah. Loved it. I predicted it on Friday that it was going to win.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about that.
All right, stand by one second here. We're going to join the radio broadcast in progress. Welcome back to the Rokon Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 yes. WGN Chicago, and also on WGN everywhere, wherever you can hear us on the apps and the computers, which we've been on since 3 o'clock this afternoon.
Mm-hmm. We've been streaming.
So if there's a conflict sometimes that if you have options, optionality, as we like to say. If you want to join us at WGNRadio.com or on the app or on WGN Radio on TuneIn. That's what you, if you have a smart speaker, that's all you say to them, and then mm-hmm. all of a sudden we pop up.
Yeah.
And really, for the last 2 hours and 17 minutes, we said things we could never say on the radio.
A couple of things were said that probably would not have been okay.
I didn't mean anything I said,
yeah,
I swear.
Kevin could be in trouble. He could be in HR. I'm not sure what would have happened to Kevin.
Offended every woman on this program.
People really don't know what they're missing.
Yes. And then we had a conversation about the Oscars, which we will actually have again at 6
yeah,
o'clock with Richard
fun.
Roper.
There's a lot there to discuss.
But about the different take on the Oscars this year.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mean anything I said.
Yeah. So it's a very interesting time. But you know what I did? Mm. I saved the top five for us.
Nice.
So
like
let's do
that.
Here we go. You want to do that?
Let's do it.
We can do it.
All right.
All right. We'll
let's
do it
go.
Right here.
Mm-hmm.
It's the top five on the Rokon Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokon Show with Anna DeVlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right. Checking in, huh?
Number five.
Good morning, America. Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson doubled down on the theory that Jussie Smollett staged his own assault.
So we had gathered up a lot of evidence and facts before then, but what changed was that they then became cooperating witnesses.
It was there a reason why they became in the 47th hour that they decided to do that?
Well, you know, we worked very closely with their lawyer, and their lawyer went in there and talked to him, and whatever she said to him apparently got through to him to just tell the truth about what happened, and that's what they decided to do.
You see, Robin Roberts was like, were you beating them? What was going on there? That's almost the implication of her question. Was there something in that 47th hour that you stopped doing to them to get them to...
Something we need to know, given what she's heard.
But that's what they did. They sweated him, essentially. They put him, you know, they had 48 hours that they could hold him. They had to give him up after 48 hours. And it was, you know, finally it was like, all right, you guys... Because you guys are going to go to jail. He's going to turn on you and send you to jail. Or you're going to send him to jail.
So it's pretty simple, your choice here.
Yeah. He also said this, though.
So right now, as I said, he still has a presumption of innocence, and he'll get his opportunity in court if he chooses to go that route. And again, you know, I was very acutely aware of the situation in terms of the Chicago Police Department declaring he was a suspect. But I can tell you this, Rob, there's a lot more evidence that hasn't been presented yet that does not support the version that he gave.
That was the sort of news break there that he broke news when he said that. Because it seemed like we've gotten a lot of information about the crime, the way they've laid it out in very great detail.
Well, about
more
that,
so than you see.
There may be more evidence that shows up what they've already said.
Right.
We have phone records, they have video, they got other things.
Actual evidence. And I like how you said we treated him as a victim until we had concrete evidence to prove otherwise.
Right. So. I don't think Chicago Police did anything wrong in this case.
Don't either.
And I think that Jussie Smollett has really few options left.
How about it?
All right. Checking in at
number four.
Speaking of winnowing options,
mm-hmm.
R. Kelly plea was entered in court today of not guilty in these charges of sex abuse against teenage girls. But Michael Avenatti is in town and representing some of the accusers and says that it's time for Kelly to face the music.
This man deserves to be locked up for the rest of his life. And the fact of the matter is, and I'm going to call it like I see it, had these victims not been black, and had they not come from, in many cases, disadvantaged households or households of a lower socioeconomic status, this guy would not be walking free today. Those days, however, are over.
Steve Greenberg is the attorney for R. Kelly, and he says that he has no reason to believe any of these accusations.
So here we deal with police, we deal with prosecutors, we deal with judges, we deal with juries. If someone wants to inflict, you know, a slow bleed or whatever they are, promote themselves. I can't do anything about that. You know, we have ethical rules here in Illinois. I'm a licensed attorney in Illinois. I'm constrained by the ethical rules from saying what I might want to say. Other people come in here, they're not constrained by our ethical rules. They're not lawyers here. They have no part in this process. They're not the police. They're not the prosecutor. If they think they've got evidence, turn it over.
All righty, Steve Greenberg and Avenatti are sparring back and forth, trading insults.
Hey, guys, and just to let you know, R. Kelly has just walked out of jail.
Oh, just going to ask that.
Did he get into that big, it's like a big sprinter van that he arrived in that had speakers everywhere?
Not sure about that.
That was the worst arrival ever to show up at jail. You don't want to show up in a sprinter van with a whole entourage of people pouring out like you're just like you're arriving at a club.
Yeah.
That is not the look you're going for there.
Doesn't look as like you're taking everything as seriously as you should.
And then to go, hey, we don't have any money. We can't afford to post bail because I'm broke. And that must have been news to the guy driving the sprinter van, I'll tell you that.
Right? He's like, am I going to get paid?
Right. That guy's like, hey, wait a second. Wait. What do you mean you're broke? You know, this is $1,500 an hour, the sprinter van. All right. We continue on to the top five of five.
Number three.
Taylor Swift helped give one of her biggest fans the engagement party of a lifetime when she made a surprise appearance to serenade his fiance with an acoustic version of King of My Heart. Alexander Goldschmidt is 30. He's been a Swiftie, is that what they call him?
Mm-hmm.
He's been Swiftie for years, so when he popped the question to his boyfriend, Ross Gerard, he knew an appearance from the singer, 29 years old now, would be the perfect way to begin the rest of their lives together.
There is one secret that I didn't trust any of you with.
You're pregnant.
And so I would like to welcome, and if you would give a warm welcome, to my friend Taylor.
Okay,
isn't
now,
that sweet?
It's very sweet.
Isn't it? She's so good to her fans.
Country music has changed like the Oscars. I really could not imagine Merle Haggard showing up at a gay engagement and singing.
She's crossover, too. She's not just country anymore. But that, I think that was... you've seen these stories of, that she does it. She'll go to a hospital bed for a super fan or a young kid who just like wants, just loves her. And
very
she,
nice.
Or she's floated money in the Me Too movement to other women who were fighting issues that they couldn't afford. Give her some credit.
All right. She gets the credit.
Number two.
He gets the credit, too. Spike Lee.
Yeah.
Was unimpressed that his critically acclaimed film Black Klansman lost out to Peter Farrelly's Green Book. Backstage after the Oscars, he was pretty vocal about it.
Hi.
Yes, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good.
I just wanted to ask you, we saw a little bit of a reaction to the Green Book win. Can you give us your thoughts on that Best Picture win?
Let me take another sip. Next question.
We're going to come down here then.
Oh, wait a minute. What reaction did you see? What did I do? No, I thought it was courtside at the Garden. The ref made a bad call.
We'll move over here.
Courtside.
95.
The world's most famous arena, Madison Square Garden. Knicks coming back next year.
Anything but talk about it. You said a lot with not saying anything.
Yeah. Yeah. He did win the Oscar for screenplay for Black Klansman.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't win the big... those are all... Everything in that had a chance. It was, as Richard Rohrbrill will tell us at 6 o'clock, it was the most wide-open Oscars of all time.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
And I just kind of thought the Green Book was the one that was going to... It's the most traditionally kind of Hollywood-ish kind of movie in terms of very glossy, beautiful, big budget, great acting.
Mm-hmm. Spike Lee said, every time somebody's driving somebody, I lose because Do the Right Thing lost to driving Miss Daisy.
Right. That is true. That is true. But he got his first competitive Oscar last night, and that means everything.
That's huge.
For him. And
well deserved.
And Black Klansman, I enjoy Black Klansman more than I did Green Book. That's true.
I enjoy his body of work. I haven't seen Black Klansman yet, but I want to now.
Oh, Black Klansman!
It was
amazing.
Really good. You gotta see this.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Green Book though.
Yeah, they're both great, but Black Klansman is a very special movie. It's got, first of all, they're kind of both based on a true story. I think Black Klansman is a little closer to the true story than Green Book, maybe.
Hmm.
But we're all very interesting. And Mahershala Ali can do no wrong.
Oh, he's the best.
Mahershala Ali has been on the scene for 7 years maybe now?
Feels like it.
Right?
He's just great in everything.
House of Cards, where he sort of sprung to prominence. Mm-hmm. And then now he's at the Oscars and he just wins. He's a guy you do not want to be running against under any circumstances.
You do not want to be in his category.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Mahershala is actually short for his real last name, or his real first name, by the way. Look it up.
That's how he shortened
it. It's like three more syllables.
Okay. Hey, I'll tell you, you know what's interesting, though, is that as many people were thinking Black Panther was going to run away with stuff, it did in some of the technical awards, like costume, mm-hmm. right? Which Richard Roper predicted exactly was going to happen because he had to make up costumes whole cloth like they did for Star Wars and stuff. What would people have actually been, dressed in a made-up world? So, and it was so big and bold and all that. So it was very, it was not based on anything in history like The Favorite and, things like that. But, again, there was a little something for everybody last night.
Yeah.
Unless you were a corpulent, old, white studio executive. Then you got nothing out of it.
You weren't happy.
No.
No. You were not.
where are all the white men at? I mean, that was honest to God. It was like that.
I got the answer everywhere.
Right.
Right.
Oscar's so not white.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It was like, actually, Oscar's no white is what it was last night. It was like, I don't know. They're not going to show up. And again, they almost tackled the guy, the head of the academy, because he was an unescorted white man walking on the stage.
It's like, where's the person with you? How are you allowed up there by yourself?
That was very weird, though. The one thing, it was so surprising. Aquafina, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Who's wearing that rose-colored monochromatic suit.
And John Mulaney, who's from Chicago, who's got this huge stand-up career going right now. He used to be a writer at Saturday Night Live, and then he decided to go on stage and do this stuff, and he's really, really good. But he's an overnight sensation, and so is she to some degree, although she was in Crazy Rich Asians. It is fascinating how quickly that can happen.
Yes.
You go from being barely known to 2 years later, you're giving away an Oscar.
Well, I was thinking about that with Jennifer Lopez, because remember, she wasn't even really in movies, and she showed up in that dress when she was 24, and that green, was it Versace?
Yeah.
And she just owns the red carpet no matter what she's wearing, but suddenly everybody was talking about her. Or you think about Liz Hurley, right?
Yeah.
Making an entrance and not even winning, just sort of being
just
there,
being
making
there, right?
Some sort of a presence.
I just A-Rod looking like in an accessory all of last night.
See, look, he looks very fine looking accessory.
A-Rod has turned into a handbag overnight.
He's very accomplished.
And finally,
number one.
Okay, we've heard and seen a lot of mic'd up players over the years, right? They put a microphone on football players and basketball players, baseball players, get a sense of what they're talking about.
I like that.
But now, how about a 4-year-old hockey player, Mason Rupke?
This is going to be good.
His dad was curious about what his son thought it was like to be out on the ice as he's, learning to play the game of hockey, the great game of hockey. So, what happens when a 4-year-old gets tired on the ice?
The Zamboni coming on?
What's that, Mason?
Is the Zamboni coming on?
Yeah, the Zamboni will come on.
Why?
We'll play a little practice.
Yeah.
I'll be goalie, okay?
Okay. Am I a good scorer? Oh, yeah, I am. Okay, you garbage. Yay, I scored, Daddy! Dad, I love you so much. My legs are tired.
Aw, poor little
so
guy.
Cute.
He wanted adorable.
So he also wanted to go to McDonald's at one moment. He was like, so tired. Am I going to McDonald's after this?
Hey, hockey's rough, you get tired.
If only the Hawks had gone to McDonald's on Friday or Sunday night, I'd have been a happier man. Separate issue!
Totally separate.
And when you're little, trying to skate in all those ruts that people create, it's hard.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You cannot skate out of them.
That's why the Modi had to come out. All right, goodbye now.
The top five at five.
Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here at 720 WGN. We're able to get the top five in right after the White Sox game. And now we sit 25 hours away from polls closing in Chicago. 25 hours and 21 minutes, but who's counting? From the polls closing in Chicago, and there is a mayoral election tomorrow, municipal election. There's the aldermanic candidates and city clerk, city treasurer, and I think there's some other stupid stuff on the ballot, too. I'm not exactly sure what it is.
Stupid stuff.
Yeah, but I looked at the ballot, and I'm like, I don't understand any of the questions that they're asking here. But it's like a, they're like precinct by precinct questions, I think, so that you can try to, you know, vote your local businesses out of your precinct. John Fritchie is our municipal elections analyst and former Cook County Commissioner and former state rep as well, lifelong Chicagoan attorney. And let's just start with this. I was out and about this weekend at a bunch of different charity events and a lot. And, you know, this is the weekend where everybody who's running for mayor wants to go be seen somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Right? That's a big deal. And they want to go be seen in, you know, places. And yesterday, the big one was a pancake breakfast for the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation. Get Behind the Vest. It was at St. John Fisher over on 103rd and just west of Western, between Western and Kedzie. Who's asking?
Over there by there?
Over, it's over by there.
I know the spot pretty well.
And Matt O'Shea, the alderman down there, puts that on every year. It's really an amazing event. And so crowded yesterday because mayoral candidate, and mayoral candidates were lined up outside to get in when the cameras were there to make sure that they were seen. What I was surprised by is some of the candidates who weren't there. Not everybody was there, though. That was kind of a Tony Preckwinkle was not there, or as Willie Wilson calls her, Tony Preckwinkle was not there, or another was Susana Mendoza.
Well, you know what? You had a lot of candidates covering a lot of ground yesterday.
Yeah, they had to. This is the last Sunday.
Church stops, community events, bus stops, shopping centers, on and on and on. So, you know, try as they may, they can't get to every place.
I didn't see Gary McCarthy there either. I might have missed him, but I don't recall him being there.
Now, that
surprised me.
That's a big surprise unless he assumes that, you know, he's going to do well with those folks already.
Or not.
Or not.
Yeah. Either way.
One of the two.
Yeah. It was interesting, but Daly, Chico,
Jeremiah Joyce was there.
Jeremiah Joyce was there all day.
No, wait, Jeremiah or Jerry?
Jerry.
Yeah. Jeremiah's the dead.
Yeah,
he isn't a shortened Jeremiah.
He is, Jerry's son is Jeremiah.
The one running for mayor.
Yeah, Jerry Joyce. He's on all of the placards, and he's got a lot of placards.
He does.
I got to tell you something about Jerry Joyce. I had my prediction about where we were going to be going here as of a week ago and 5 days ago, but I think Jerry Joyce might make the top four.
I've said for a while now that I thought he was going to do a lot better than people expected. He's got a strong base out of the 19th Ward.
Right.
He's had
early voting huge down there.
He's had a good presence on television. He's had folks out there making the rounds, and he's getting his name out there, and it's a good ballot name. You know, and even in a race like this, you still have people that say, yeah, Jerry Joyce, that sounds like a nice guy.
And isn't he at the top of the ballot, too? I thought he got one of the top spaces.
That sounds right.
Mm-hmm. Well, so you see the new the poll that's not an internal poll. It's the Obama, I guess, campaigners who from 2012. And it shows that we've got Tony Preckwinkle, Bill Daly, and Lori Lightfoot all tied at the top with 14%. Is that surprising to you?
Well, I will tell you in all honesty that I received three emails before 8 a.m. this morning from three different candidates, each of whom had a poll that had them solidly in first place. So, it's tough to tell at this point in time. That poll is actually probably one of the more interesting ones because when you look at not just who they have getting in the matchups, but who would win the head-to-heads.
Right.
So they don't necessarily have Mendoza in the final two, but they said that if she was against Daly or if she was against Preckwinkle,
final matchups.
She would win.
She would beat both of them. They had Lightfoot over, I think, Daly, Mendoza, or Preckwinkle.
Preckwinkle.
And you're going to start to see, you know, a little bit of calculations in people's minds saying, well, I don't want this person in the runoff, so I'm going to vote for that person, even though they may not vote for that person, you know, in the final election.
I heard from friends in the city who have landlines that immediately after that poll, it seemed like they started to get the Lori stuff, the anti-Daly stuff, the anti-Preckwinkle started to flood their phone lines about how evil everybody else is, right?
Well, and people are getting it, online, through digital ads, via text message these days, on and on and on. And, you know, it'll be nice to give everybody's inbox a rest after tomorrow.
4% undecided, according to that poll, too. That's the lowest we've seen. That's been the story all along.
That's the biggest one. That seems like an outlier to me. Because even as much as little as a week or so ago, you know, you still had undecided. It's close to 18 to 20%. And as we discussed last time I was on, you know, how those undecideds break really get down to, you know, who's going to make those final two. You know, and so there really hasn't been a lot of surprises over the last couple of weeks. You know, Lightfoot's had a strong finish. Preckwinkle has had stumbles, you know, related to her, related to people around her. And, you know, I think people are starting to coalesce. You have a lot of vote-by-mail ballots that haven't been returned yet. You had a lot requested, but a lot of those aren't in, which go back to the fact that, you know, we may not know by tomorrow night. If this is as close as it looks like it's going to be, we could wake up on Wednesday and still not know who the final two are.
We could wake up a week from Wednesday and not know, because they're going to have to wait on the mail-in ballots. And the question is, how many mail-in ballots are out? You know, it has to be the difference in the margin for them to call the election. And it could be. I mean, you could actually have that. And that is a pretty it's a pretty daunting thought to have here. How's Willie doing in that poll?
Willie's, where is he? He's you got the Susanna, it would be fourth in that poll with 10%, although it was an English only poll. They say that it might have impacted her situation there. Willie comes then at 9%, just tied with Gary Chico for, I guess that would be fifth and sixth.
And Anna, when you factor in the margin of error on these things, you still have, you know, arguably half a dozen candidates that are right in the mix on this one. I will say this, though, and I had this discussion over the weekend. I think that this has been a very healthy exercise for the city. You cannot say that you weren't given a choice. You've got something for everybody, as we've discussed before, whether it's by ethnicity, gender, age, whatever it may be.
And so ideology. So
Chicagoans are really saying, well, ideology, not so much, because I'm looking at the standpoint that, you know, every candidate is saying, we want safer streets, we want better schools, we need to take care of the, you know, city's finances.
Well, they know what the priorities are, but how they'd prioritize it and the way they'd approach it, I think there are differences in that. We just heard Bill Daley talking about how he would take a real close look at the pensions and having to see what he would do in terms of what could be done in terms of an amendment to the Constitution. And I don't hear the other candidates saying that. You've got more progressive candidates in the race. The other thing that came out of this this poll, which I thought was interesting, that Chicago's financial stability ranked tops on the issues people identified as most important, followed closely by crime as well. I don't think the crime one surprises me. I know that's a top priority for most of the people I speak with. Financial stability, I think, is a looming issue, but it's not always one you see people identify when they're choosing their candidate.
Well, you won't see it in those words as much as you'll see people realizing now that financial stability or instability relates to their taxes going up. So whether it's property tax, whether it's a water tax, cable tax, phone tax, bag tax, on and on. And so they realize that if the city doesn't get their financial house in order, that somebody's got to foot the bill.
Well, the piece that I think these guys, these men and women who are running here, these is a total of, what is it, 14 on the ballot total?
Yeah.
When you look at the ballot itself, tomorrow, for people who, if you voted early, you've seen this, and I think there's something around 12 or 13,000 that have voted early, I think, so far.
I think it's about 18,000. Went up to, they had 18,000 come in, so maybe about 115,000. So you have 11% more registered voters than we had last time around. But the numbers are, they're up at a good clip.
Like 18,000 in terms of early voters.
That had just come in, yes.
They've just come in. So it's a total of 115,000?
I think that's right.
Really?
I think that's right.
That's a big number. What's the total number of voters?
It's a big number.
Assuming everybody gets one, what is the total number of voters?
Well, here, now I got to
big assumption, Ro. Big assumption. Now, yeah. Redo your numbers. No, they've said the election board spokesman Jim Allen says 62,000 mail-in ballots requested. Only 31,000 have been returned.
And so those are the mail-ins. Which
that's mail-in. We're talking about early.
Different
though.
Than early vote.
Oh, okay. You're separating them.
Yes, because the early numbers. Voting, and so let's say it's 115. That's a big number. So total, I think, what is it, 700,000?
I was going to say 600 and change. It'll be interesting to see the turnout numbers. I think in the last election when we had
that's a big number for the early. If that indicates that turnout could be pretty good tomorrow.
And what's interesting is, though, that, you know, early voting has really changed campaign strategy. because when you're going to time kind of your closing message, when you're going to time a late hit on an opponent, you know, you really have to stagger that now because you have people voting, you know, weeks in advance of Election Day.
But we'll be right back. I have some, I got to redo my math here right now. Hold on. I may have to rethink this entire thing. Willie Wilson got to change the ad in which he says, I'm picking him to come in second.
Yeah, you had Bill Daly and Willie Wilson.
And you didn't even hesitate.
I did not have Toni Perkinkle. I did not have her in my final two. I sensed a fade in her in terms of just how she was, how much she was on television in terms of paid advertising and what people were saying when I was out talking to people. As you know, and I do, I talk to all the people in my blue Bentley on the way to get
come
a massage.
Here, dear. Let me talk to you.
Get out of the way. It doesn't count as talking to them.
Move it.
And who are you voting for mayor?
Well, very scientific poll.
Yeah.
You know, Perkwinkle's taking a very safe strategy, which was good when she had a clear lead. But I think that, you know, I'm surprised that she hasn't been more out there as the race tightened and as she was no longer even seen as the front runner. But when you had that number of undecideds.
She calls herself the front runner, though. She was coming out of a church yesterday where she was like, well, you know, when you're the front runner, you're taking that. I don't think she's that. I have never seen her as the actual front runner.
You know, when she first came out, and let's keep in mind, when she first came out, this was being treated as a done deal. And that, you know, this was all but a coronation. And then people started to realize that wasn't the case and started taking a look at the other candidates. And no, I think, she would be the first to admit if she were the candidate about it that, you know, these have not been the last 2 weeks she would have chosen going into the election.
I think that is for sure. I mean, not even to mention how much Willie Wilson mangles her name. Not even to mention that.
See, the best part would be if he was doing it on purpose. Then you'd really have to appreciate it.
Right, that's really true. That's right. And but I think the beauty part is he's not.
No,
and that
he's
makes
not
him
being
very
spiteful.
Charming. That's, I think, the best part of that. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Our mayoral election analyst, John Fritchie, is with us.
And you guys, you're right, John. 100,000 have early voted. 62,000 mail-in ballots have been requested. 31,000 returned.
Wait, what was the first part of that?
62,000.
No, before that.
100,000, which is just what you said.
No, I was looking for
early
you're
voting.
Right, John.
Yeah.
You're right, John.
He never hears that.
Did I say that enough?
I never
no.
hear that.
He never
you're
hears
right,
that, especially
John.
Out of a female voice.
You're
he
so
never
right.
hears that. He hears, John, you're totally wrong a lot. And I'm going
to
tell, I find it very interesting as we look at these most recent polls that are basically showing this, a dead heat between Lori Lightfoot, Toni Perkwinkle, Bill Daly.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jerry Joyce is now up in the top five, right? Something like that.
You've got Susana Mendoza coming in behind them with, according to this latest poll, with 10%. And then it goes to Gary Chico, Willie, tied behind them.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry Joyce, 8%.
So now, isn't it interesting? I find this fascinating that the people who got in early, who were like, well, if you didn't get in early, you shouldn't pay any attention to these people. They're latecomers. They just got in because Rahm got out. But essentially, except for Lori Lightfoot, who got in early.
McCarthy.
Yeah, but he's not up in the top.
No.
But in the front runners right now, it's all people who got in after Rahm got out, except for Lori.
Yeah.
That's right. And, you know, you have to give Lori some credit for that, too, for saying, hey, I always want to take it on when it was an uphill battle.
Right. I don't think the voter cares about that.
No, I think that's right.
Well, what matters is I think the other people's names were more well-known. You know a Bill Daly, you know Toni Perkwinkle, you know Susana Mendoza. You had to learn a lot about Lori Lightfoot, I think, in order to understand what she was all about.
Right.
You know, one thing we didn't touch on is, you know, tomorrow especially, having a ground game. This is where kind of old-fashioned politics kind of comes into play here when it's going to be that close. Who's going to be able to knock on doors? Who's going to get voters out to the polling place? Make sure that, you know, they bring, you know, quote-unquote, their voters out. And that's not something you have seen up until now. This isn't a door-to-door race, but the close of this is going to be door-to-door. I think tonight and all day tomorrow from, you know, 6 a.m., you know, till 7 p.m. when those polls close, you know, the folks are going to be dragging them out.
Yeah.
The buses are going
to
show up.
How many votes do you think you're going to need in order to be in that top two? What number of votes are you talking there? We got 1.5 million registered voters in Chicago. Obviously, in the February election, you don't see that many.
Right. So, if you know, ordinarily, let's say about 50% of the people who live here are registered to vote. The turnout in the last election was about 34%. So when you look at that, you know,
it's right normally around, somewhere around 600,000 votes.
It's, I was going to say, it's right what Roe said before, right in that range.
But split 14.
So if you start, you know, if you put the front runners somewhere, you know, between 10-12%, Roe, how much would that be?
That'd be 60,000, Jenny. That'd be 60 to 64,000. Thank you very much. Yeah, well, he did that to me once in eighth grade, and I wasn't able to answer the question. Hey, but let's stop, because if it's, I think you're going to need about 100.5 is gets you. That gets you in the top three, and then of that top three, who knows? I think this is a very important point. We may not know, because if they're within 30,000 votes, there's 30,000 outstanding as of tomorrow, which there may well be. We're going to have to wait on those. There may be wards that are going to come in late. You're going to have other there may be aldermanic races that are so tight they're going to ask for a recount in those aldermanic races.
But you know, when you have a ward recount, they recount those votes. They don't redo the entire ballots.
Only redo the aldermanic.
The contested.
They hold the
race that's contested.
Okay.
Right. The thing that I didn't like that I read today was, you know, it's going to be so close, it's shaping up for a nightmare scenario. You know, this is how elections work. They don't always have the people that really want the election results that night by 10 p.m. when the news starts, you know, is the media. But the Board of Elections, they allow a couple weeks to make sure they have everything in before they certify it. I don't think it even gets officially certified till maybe March 12th, March 13th, somewhere in that range.
All right. This could be a late night tomorrow night.
Going to be interesting.
I just know that Kim Jong-un would have won this thing going away, but we'll see. Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Always appreciate it.
I didn't like this either.
The Oscars rocked me. I liked it.
I did.
I didn't mind that the host wasn't there. It didn't bother me as much as I thought. And it made me want to watch more because I wondered how the heck are they going to string this all together.
It
didn't bother me.
They didn't string it. There was no stringing.
Didn't bother me.
It was like my Thanksgiving turkey when I put it on the rotisserie and the legs are flying apart and the one foot is dragging across the grate and then it's coming back up and the leg falls off before we're done. Do you need a host? Richard Roper, do you need a host?
Well, I do think there were some awkward moments. Once the show gets going, we had disembodied woman in the booth doing all the introductions. We're trying to find her, who that was. But the beginning, okay, first of all, the Queen thing, you know, Adam Lambert's a fine talent. There's no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. But as you could hear from that, he doesn't sound like Freddie Mercury. He doesn't try to sound like Freddie Mercury. So now you're really just watching a really good Queen cover band open the Oscars.
With Brian May.
With Brian May playing, you know, the guitar solo. I think the drummer's also from Queen. But, and, you know, they're trying to get that Grammy vibe. But, you know, you can't do that because if you were going to duplicate the Grammy vibe, then Richard E. Grant and Melissa McCarthy would have to recreate scenes from Can You Ever Forgive Me on stage, right? That would be doing their thing. So, and you could see the crowd got up for the beginning of We Will Rock You, but by the time they got to We Are the Champions, everyone was sitting down. How long is Glenn Close going to rock it, you know, in the stiletto heels?
Right.
So that was weird. And then I thought Tina Fey and Amy Poehler and Maya Rudolph were terrific. Why not just have them host?
That was the ultimate tease of all teases because I love them. I think all of them or any combination of them would have been amazing as hosts. And when they came out, I was like, maybe.
Yeah.
Just tells you how awful American Idol is, because the two people who were on the Oscar stage last night, one of the most celebrated singers of her generation, lost in the eighth.
Jennifer Hudson came in eighth,
with eight left, she was knocked out,
mm-hmm.
and then Adam Lambert, who didn't make it to the final either.
Yeah, but Justin Twarini did really well. And
Lee DeWise was not up there last night. I get
it. But, you know, and you're right about Jennifer Hudson. She is the consummate performer. She always commands the stage. You know, and she did the song from RBG, right? And was just magnificent. As were Bradley Cooper. And Lady Gaga.
Took my breath away.
I know. Somebody was cutting onions during that segment.
You too. I love it. You're just like, it's emotional.
Are they married yet, by the way? Because wasn't that the whole thing yesterday when she broke up with her fiance or something?
Did you take a look at Bradley's current paramour? She was fine. Yeah, you go up there and have your little musical number.
I wouldn't have been fine with that, and I'm not sure she was either. They were just...
It was pretty intimate. I thought that was mostly Gaga. That's just what a performer she is. But yeah, the way she looked at him... Wow.
I hope someone looks at me one day the way Bradley Cooper looked at Lady Gaga.
I think the unsung heroes were the 12 people who, because they didn't go to a commercial and they didn't have, the disembodied lady didn't introduce Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper. All they did was they opened the curtain, and 12 people wheeled out a piano, set up the two microphones. Carried the piano because you don't want to scuff that Aquaman stage that they had left over from the set of the Aquaman movie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And set up the mics, right? Uh-huh. And everything. And we're off stage in 8 seconds. It was like a pit crew at NASCAR.
Yeah. They just hopped up on stage. It was
amazing how they did that.
And then they shot it from behind. So it was like the audience looking on. They looked like they were the only two people in the room. They gave you that feeling. And then everyone else was looking on. It was such an intimate moment. Their chemistry is unbelievable.
May I just ask you a question? She broke up with her fiance.
Well, they split up. Now, what do we know? Last week. But we don't know if it was both of them? A conscious uncoupling? We don't know.
And this, the young lady who was with Bradley Cooper.
Karina Shaik, who has
she's like 23 years old or something. They have a kid together, right?
Yeah.
She's very young.
A little older than that.
But yes, they've been together for quite a while.
Isn't she like very young when they got together?
Well, you know, they're all young when we get together with them.
She's 33.
Look at that.
Full-grown adult.
So she's past her prime as a supermodel, clearly, as you could tell.
Well, she did have that look like she was going to kill somebody.
I thought so. I thought she was not fine with
everything.
That's
her resting face, I think.
Her retching bee face.
One does not know if she can actually move any of the muscles on her face. So that was okay.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Bro. But
it was a great moment. And, you know, we've talked about this for Bradley Cooper to do that as a non-professional singer. You know, Emily Blunt actually opted out of singing the Place Where Lost Things Go from Mary Poppins Returns, which she did perform. Again, unlike Rami Malek, she actually did sing in a movie, which is good. And she said, quite frankly, that she'd be too nervous. She's not a professionally, you know, trained singer. So they went with that kid, Bette Midler, to sing the song, who did an amazing job. But I don't blame Emily Blunt for saying, you know what, I don't feel comfortable. And so for Bradley, of course, now he did have the buffer of Lady Gaga, which helps a lot. You know,
but he held his own.
Had to do it. And man, if he cracks his voice or something there, you
they
know.
Should have Bette Midler come out and do the Queen song. I would have worked the whole thing.
Then you got two queens.
Yeah, hello.
I have a proposal, though. Why don't they just have all of the nominees submit their thank you lists in advance, and then they can scroll them behind them?
That's a great idea.
And then
make your
speech about the message, because that's what people want to hear.
That's absolutely. That's brilliant, Anna. They should do that, because I remember one winner did say, all of my team, all of myself, you know who you are. I'm going to thank you at the party or something like that. Because you're right. Spike Lee, I mean, there's a guy who's been on the world stage for 25 years. And all of a sudden, he pulls out his yellow notepad from NYU. Well,
you know what he is, though?
You know?
He is the ultimate geek. When you look at
Mars
Spike
Blackman,
Lee.
Mars Blackman, right?
Yeah. It's exactly who he is. He's
Michael
Mars Blackman.
Jordan commercials. Yeah.
He's a super fan of cinema, of the arts, of music, right?
Because
his use of music in film is, I mean, he and Scorsese are the two best ever to use popular music, and then his scores are better than anything since the days of Randy Newman's uncle and Alfred Hitchcock together. I mean, it's that good.
Scores are amazing.
And in sports and the Knicks and that whole thing, he's a fanboy. He is like a 14-year-old geek, and that's why he is so great at what he does, because of his passion for it. And so when he pulls that thing out, and he might have been a little drunk, and he's holding on to the Prince Ankh thing that he was wearing, right? Let's listen to it a little bit. I was so happy that he won this award.
Yes.
Before the world tonight, I give praise to our ancestors who built this country and what is today, along with the genocide of his native people. The 2020 presidential election is around the corner. Let's all mobilize. Let's all be on the right side of history. Make the moral choice between love versus hate. Let's do the right thing. You know I had to get that in there.
So the president didn't like that.
Yeah, but, you know, he never mentioned Trump. Maybe he was, you know, Trump should have said, thank you for Spike Lee, for a fellow New Yorker supporting me by saying we should do the right thing in 2020. That would have been the move. Be on the right side, like Spike Lee said.
It was very interesting because Trump did what he does so often, excuse me, when he's critical of of his critics, and he just has this thing where he likes to go after the whether Spike Lee's smart. Right, which is really,
I know.
I mean, listen, the politics be damned. You may not agree with the politics. I may not even agree with the politics completely, these guys that get up and they do what they're going to do, and he's out. I mean, when you see Black Klansman, you'll understand the concept of that, because what he does, that movie was made, right? The Black Klansman was written and on its way, and all principal photography was done, and the editing was done, and then Charlottesville happens. And Spike Lee chose, spoiler alert, Spike Lee chose to tack on the images of Charlottesville at the end of the film, almost as like an addendum, an epilogue to what you'd already seen. It had nothing to do with the action in the
because
film.
The movie is set in the early 70s with the Klan. So, you know, here he was showing the more things change, the more they don't.
Right. And that was what he was trying to do. And I said at the time, when I saw it, it came out on the 1 year anniversary of Charlottesville. Totally accidental.
Right.
For that weekend. But it did. That's the weekend that it premiered. I think over time, I was wondering how that's going to play over time, because the Black Klansman, that movie will hold over time. It's in the way that Goodfellas holds over time, in the way that so many other films do. And when you see that film, it is really an amazing film of cultural and racial misunderstanding. The ultimate buddy film, when Spike Lee was mad about Green Book, is basically Green Book. It's the same concept, right? Well, in a lot of ways,
except for yeah, yes and no. But he did point out, I thought, with much cleverness, that he lost to Driving Miss Daisy back in '89. So he goes, I'm always on the wrong side of the driver in these movies.
Whenever someone's driving somebody else, I lose.
Yeah, exactly. Which is, yes, his anger is real, but there's also, some sense of perspective. There always has been from Spike.
Richard, how often do we see the Best Picture, Best Director kind of go hand in hand? And when you saw him get adapted screenplay, you kind of thought, okay, we're building up to Best Picture here. It just felt
Alfonso Cuarón, who won 3 Oscars and has think 5 now, and didn't win Best Picture. I think people thought, because usually it's sort of like, how can someone win Best Director but not win Best Picture? Because it's sort of like you won for Best Painter, but you didn't win for Best Painting.
That makes sense.
So it's kind of strange. Green Book, you could tell Julie Roberts was surprised. I didn't think it was going to win. The other thing that's still, I know I've been harping on Bohemian Rhapsody, but nobody in Bohemian Rhapsody, nobody associated with that film, ever wants to thank, there's a guy up in Canada who's a religious singer, Christian rock singer, whose vocals were used. Because a lot of people said, Rami Malek, we know he's lip-syncing to Freddie Mercury like in the big Live Aid scene, but what about the sequences where he's just in a room or he's singing Happy Birthday and kind of stopped or something? That's a Canadian singer who sounds just like Freddie Mercury, and they blended his vocals in. Nobody thanked him!
Let me just tell you something.
Yeah.
I was shocked by that. I was shocked. There were such amazing performances this year by lead actors. Amazing.
Yeah.
And again, the Freddie Mercury thing, he moves. It's Rami Malek moving.
Yes,
right.
Absolutely.
And it's Rami Malek in the scenes where he's doing.
Absolutely,
right,
he's wonderful. He's
right,
good. Yeah,
and he's always good. He was good when he played the King Tut or whatever when he was lost in a museum. I mean, it was the first time you see him, that guy's going to be somebody, right?
It's true.
I mean, you did have that thought.
Yeah,
but still.
Yeah,
I don't think that was the performance when you're up against. I mean, and again, put him up against Bradley Cooper. And I'm sorry to keep going back to this, but I cannot believe that Bradley Cooper didn't win a single time in any of the, even the little crap kicker awards that are happening, like the Boston Film Festival and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, you know, here's the thing. We now live in a movie world where Bohemian Rhapsody has more Academy Awards than The Godfather.
What?
Or Casablanca, because it has four, and those two movies won three. So it just goes to show
you. There's too many.
The Academy, you know.
People love that movie, though. You didn't, as a critic, you know, you saw flaws in it as a sort of a concert film and as a rock film and as a biopic.
As a drama,
and all that.
A period piece.
Yes, you did, right.
The fact that it lip-synced.
You saw flaws in the whole thing, yes. So the teeth.
Costume.
Right. There were a lot of things you didn't like about it. But there are people, I've spoken to a lot of people just absolutely, if they love Queen, they love it.
It's a crowd pleaser, that's for sure. I'm looking forward to Ballroom Blitz, the story of Sweet. Wasn't that the group that did Ballroom Blitz? I can't remember.
All right. I was trying to find the president's tweet. It'd be nice if Spike Lee could read his notes, or better yet, not have to use notes at all when doing his racist hit on your president. On your president.
Me.
No.
Me, by the way, I'm your king, a president.
Just invented the 4th of July last weekend. So.
Right, exactly. President.
That was nice of him.
When's Bobby K leaving? When's he going over?
Trump is going to reveal the three colors to be featured on the 4th of July celebration sometime this week. I can't wait to find out.
He's in Vietnam. The most recent tweet is, I'm on my way to Vietnam.
Well, yeah, he certainly didn't send that out in the 60s.
Hello!
Oh! Ouch.
All right, Richard Roper's going to stick around. We're going to talk about the change in the Oscars in just a few years. It went from Oscars so white to Oscars no white. They arrested a guy on stage. The one middle-aged white guy who got up there on stage unaccompanied last night is the head of the Academy, and they arrested him immediately.
Yeah, it was like, what are you doing up there? That's not allowed.
He looked like a guy named Bob who just wandered in from a convention. He looked does this suit still fit me from our wedding?
No.
I mean, how he stuck out so much. He's like, he just appeared. It's like, wait, what?
Because remember, for years, the Academy, you know, Jack Valenti, who was like a former, you know, Nixon and LBJ aide and, you know,
appeared
was
in movies or
very distinguished.
He appeared on the $6 Million Man a few times.
You know, very handsome and stylish, and he'd go out there in his ruffled, you know, shirt and tuxedo and explain the rules of the Academy like a martini glass in his hand. Uh-huh. Now we got a guy with like a post-it note, you know, the hello, my name is on his lapel.
He was like the guy with the red stapler, right, from Office Space is what he looked like. And all of a sudden we're like, oh my God, why is the guy from Office Space here? And he was just standing there, and you're like, is that a chin? What is that? And there's all these beautiful people, and then an average dude. It was like if I were standing out there, like all of a sudden I show up and they're like, who's that guy?
That's another component they could always just, they don't need that.
Right.
You know, just get rid of
just
that. Because no one knows what the Academy president says when they go out there. They say something about how they do a bunch of other things.
Grammy guy. This is his last year, thank God. That Grammy guy gets out and always makes a 15-minute speech.
Yeah.
And they took all the speeches out of the Grammys. But he allows himself into the Grammys.
It's like, you know, it's like every event anybody's ever gone to where the organizer has to go up there and talk about how hard they worked for the last year putting this together. Most of you know me in this room. I am overachieving mother of three, and I am here to tell you.
All right.
Those balloons didn't blow themselves up, people. When you feel you're taking all that you can take, and you're sure you're never going to catch a break, and the tears and rivers running down. When your faith is low and you got no strength left, when you think you're gone as far as you can get, and you turn around and take another step. Oh, I will take. This is Jennifer Hudson singing the theme to RBG, one of the Oscar nominated songs last night.
Beautiful. Just amazing.
I'm just imagining last night. The Mar-a-Lago Oscar party.
Oh my goodness.
Was not, it was, there were, I'll bet you there were some champagne flutes that were thrown across the room.
Oh, jeez.
Just going to guess that.
Probably hit the guy making those omelets. Come on, man.
That's the same guy that at the Oscar party is making the crepe Suzette for dessert.
Baked Alaska, anyone?
Yes, exactly. What's going on?
We've got Bradley Cooper. I liked the tributes to all the moms, and it's just like, maybe because I am one, but it felt like there were, like, Bradley Cooper brought his mom. You saw so many of the
Regina stars. King,
Regina King, Rami Malek. Oh my gosh, the Regina King exchange with her mom.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Just moved me so much.
It used to be just the gay men who didn't want to be outed would bring their mothers to the Oscars. And now,
like, you know, or what? Leonardo DiCaprio, because he wanted to have someone at every party afterward. So, Vanity Fair wanted Elton John, all the parties.
Don't worry, baby. I'm bringing my mom.
I got to bring my
mom. So don't
worry.
You
understand.
Okay.
What's your name again? Page 37, SI catalog.
But let me ask about Bradley Cooper. His directorial debut didn't get the nod that some would have liked, and we really appreciated his work. I know Roe and I talk about it a lot. But what's ahead for him? Is he going to do more acting, more directing?
You know, it's funny, because when he was in town last year, I asked him about there have been rumors that he'd been working on a project where he'd be writer, producer, director, and star. In the story of Leonard Bernstein, the famous composer, conductor, and that is going to happen, it looks like. And he would, you know, and people don't know, this was a guy, this dashing composer, conductor, educator, you name it, in the 50s. You know, in fact, Roe was talking about the scores for Spike Lee movies. I think a lot of them are influenced by Leonard Bernstein's work, you know, West Side Story and On the Waterfront, for example, right. That kind of perfect description. If Black Klansman, I think, has a very almost on the waterfront type of thing, where even when it sometimes the music doesn't seem like it really goes with what's going on, but it really does in a different way. So,
right.
I think he's going to do that. And I think, you know, and this is a guy, you know, Greta Garbo, you know, friends with, and all, you know, Judy Holliday coming over for cocktail parties. You could see this film looking like a beautiful period piece from like 50s and 60s.
Yeah,
that's exciting.
Yeah. Bradley Cooper is a great director. You saw it in the first 2 minutes of A Star is Born, the shots he chose, how he was using the camera to get to the, and it's not just a cinematographer doing that, it's where he's choosing to set the shot.
Mm.
So the crossovers and using, I thought Lady Gaga in a way that even she would be uncomfortable with if she saw the dailies, because she would have been like, that's too close to me.
Right. She's not. I think you're right about that. Yeah.
She said that in interviews that, you know, he knew I had the singing part down, but to make me feel vulnerable as a human being, kind of as an actress,
right,
was what he was able to bring out. Just no makeup, come to set, and this is you. We want to see you.
Amazing. Well, that's what makes that movie. That's what makes that movie.
Yeah, it's actually a beautifully shot film, and people always joke about, oh, the actors, oh, what I really want to do is direct, but if you're a star of Bradley Cooper's magnitude, you know, you can go one of two ways. You can be, I'm going to be an actor and be a really good actor.
And he is.
And go to your trailer between sets and do other things and be a producer. Or, you know, you have the advantage of being on sets with great directors and learning from them. And, you know,
Look at Clint Eastwood.
Right?
I mean,
who learned from, you know, Sergio Leone and all these great directors, and Bradley Cooper, his three, you know, acting nominations. You know, he was worked with David O. Russell and lots of other top tier directors. So you can really, you know, learn a lot before you finally step behind the camera. And then Bradley Cooper did the other smart thing that Clint Eastwood was, you know, you surround yourself. You do the George W. Bush move. If you don't know what you're doing, you get a cabinet of veterans. Even if, you know, people might not agree with their politics, but here's what you do. You go, let me get some guys and women who have been here before.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Makes sense.
That's what he did for Star is Born. But Rose, absolutely right. The techniques used when you see the concert sequences, which again, we're talking about fictional music, it's still so much better looking and shot so much better than Bohemian Rhapsody. And nobody, by the way, thanked Bryan Singer yesterday, the director of Bohemian Rhapsody, because of all the controversy around him. That's the first time a Best Actor's never thanked a director. That's for sure. The director of the movie they were in.
Well, and Rami Malek, first of all, he was really awkward on the promotional tour for the movie. Right. When he did two tours. He did a tour for the movie and then an Oscar promotional tour trying to get votes himself.
Yes.
And he was out everywhere and he did. He ended up getting it, but I think I'm really surprised the Academy did. I could see him getting a People's Choice Award because, as you said, it's a crowd pleaser. I was really shocked that the Academy thought that was based on how they know how movies are made and know that he lip-synced the whole thing. That they would have done that.
And a lot of people, and I agree, there's a clip, you can find it on social media, of a scene, and it's not doctored, from Bohemian Rhapsody, where the whole band is meeting the guy that's going to become their manager, and it's shot like an episode of The Monkees. You know, shot of one actor, shot of the next actor. Sometimes they go to the wrong actor. I mean, and that film won for best editing, which is also insane in a year. I mean, Bohemian Rhapsody won for best editing. That was actually, if you're really a movie geek, the most insane thing of the whole night. When you think about the editing that goes into a movie like First Man, like Black Klansman, like Roma, I could list Spider-Verse, the cartoon. the editing is more impressive, and I'm right. not exaggerating.
I'm sort of surprised. You know, it's so funny. So I was thinking about this because it was a such, you know, 5 years after Oscar So White started, and now it was the exact opposite in a lot of ways. For until the last 15 minutes of the Oscars. Mm-hmm. It was really about diversity, right? It was an incredible diverse series of winners. It was a very incredible diverse series of nominees, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then you get to this moment where I was thinking, if I just imagine Donald Trump watching the Oscars and screen talking. To the Oscars. You know, obviously screen tweeted immediately right after Spike Lee made his speech. Mm-hmm. But about, you know, this, hey, whoa, would you look at this? You know, I just sort of, it was such a different kind of year. And I think this is kind of where it's heading. It does, I'm not sure that the Trump America versus the not Trump America, I'm not quite sure what to call it because it's an amalgam of other things at the moment. But you just do sort of wonder if they're like, all right, they got nothing. There's nothing here for me.
Yeah. Well, and then I saw, you know, Bill O'Reilly saying, you know, there was a time back in the day, you know, when movie stars were movie stars and the Oscars weren't political. And I'm like, oh, you mean like the 70s when Marlon Brando wouldn't even accept his Oscar and sent Sasheen Littlefeather up there right. to say he wasn't taking it because the treatment of Native Americans, of Jane Fonda, of right. Apocalypse Now and right. The Deer Hunter. Oh, yeah, those weren't political China times syndrome. At all back in the right. day. Or he's talking about like, and he goes, and stars were stars like Jack Nicholson. And I'm like, do you think your politics and Jack Nicholson's are the same? I don't think so, Big Bill.
Well, or they were with John Wayne, right? I mean, John Wayne would get up there and go, "What do you like to think all the Indians we killed back here?" And the thing, you know, it's like John Wayne was rarely ever sober at public events like that, even when he was presenting.
I'd like to thank Tony Manganini, who played the Indian chief.
Josh Goldblum. You think about why Oscar So White started. It was only 3 years ago. It was actually 16, and then for 2 years in a row, they had something like no white actors and actresses in the lead and supporting roles.
Right.
So there were no African Americans, no Hispanics, no Asian. I mean, how is that possible? Hollywood's taken a really close look at itself and made some changes.
Also impressive to see, like, you know, best costume and some of those other, you know, victories. That's the first time you ever had an African American woman winning.
Well, you called
production design and things like that, which was good to see as well too. The creative things and five of the last six. Best director winners are from Mexico. And as some people say, imagine if that wall wasn't up, how many talented directors would make it over here.
That's all I'm thinking about.
Kicked out of Mar-a-Lago.
At Mar-a-Lago, when Alfonso Cuarón wins for this. First of all, when they have last year's winner come out, who said he had the flu and was barely alive, but wanted to be out there for
Guillermo
this.
Guillermo del Toro.
Right.
From Mexico.
To give it to Cuarón.
Alfonso Cuarón and Iñárritu has won too. So there you go. See, I'm even getting into the pronunciation. Like right. I was going to be there.
Imagine how that's not playing well at Mar-a-Lago. Well, here's Spike Lee backstage talking about the Oscar So White.
How do you feel about the progression of black filmmakers, you know, after this year?
Here's the thing. Without April Rain, hashtag Oscar So White, and the former president of the Academy Award Motion Picture Sciences, Sherwin Isaacs, I wouldn't be here tonight. They opened up the Academy to make the Academy look more like America. It's more diverse. So that's why three black women, if I counted correctly, won Oscars. That would not have happened without Oscar So White and Cheryl Boone Isaacs. Facts. Like my brother Jay-Z says, facts.
He's right. He's talking about the fact that
I hope Jay-Z never ever said that to Beyonce, by the way.
Really. Doesn't really work in
that
elevator.
Facts. Believe that elevator camera.
Her number's not on my phone.
Facts. But we digress. Listen, I want people to win for their talent. I think that's the issue.
Yes.
And I don't want people to win because they didn't have the best product. I can say last night that the winners who won, I thought, had the best product in general. I have not seen Roma, so I don't know. but people love, you know, people who have seen it love it. And it is really about, these are about the artists voting for the artists. This is not the People's Choice Awards.
It's true.
These are the people who are voting, and not because they necessarily, I mean, is Mahershala Ali one of the great actors, maybe the greatest of his generation?
Absolutely.
I mean, he's like Laurence Olivier, that guy.
He can do anything.
And you cannot take your eyes off the guy, right? Was Black Klansman by far the best adapted screenplay? By far it was.
Mm.
You know, I don't know. In director, I don't know for sure. And then all the other technical stuff that happened along the way. You called it for exactly the right reasons about the costume design Black Panther, because it's an imaginary world. It's like Star Wars. You had to come up with a whole thing.
You're working from some comic books and things like that, but you're creating a whole other world. Same thing with production design. And for people who haven't seen The Favourite, Olivia Colman probably should have won, even though everybody was saying, oh, Glenn Close, it's her time and everything. And she's very good in The Wife. But if you watch Olivia Colman in The Favourite, if you know her from other, you know, she's in, I think she's in The Crown and other things like that. But when you watch what she does, it's like you're watching Bette Davis or, you know, Dame Judi Dench. It's one of those performers. You're like, nobody else could have been that good in that role. She's hilarious. Yeah. Oh, yeah. She was fantastic.
Yeah.
That's what we need more of.
At
the end, she just went, Lady Gaga. It's because she's hard in the front row. That was nice.
And it is about bringing the art to the mainstream, too. I mean, I don't think Black Klansman could have gotten made in, you know, 20 years ago, for sure.
No.
And, you know, now, I mean, Spike's been making movies now for 30 years, right?
And he knows how to do, he's like, you know, like Clint Eastwood, he knows how to do a movie on a relatively small budget, on time.
Right.
You know, very friendly, but very efficient sets, because as you've mentioned, Ro, he works with the same people all the time, too.
Right.
So they know his shorthand.
It's not politically correct to mention him anymore, but Woody Allen, same sort of thing. I mean, that's a very similar style.
Very economical in more ways than
prolific filmmakers. And Spike's a great writer. And you can tell he writes on a yellow pad. That's how he starts all of his thoughts.
Well, Glenn Close now. Glenn, oh, so
poor Glenn.
Close.
Changing
your name to Oh, So Close.
Gosh. Isn't she the most nominated and not receiving?
Seven now. So.
Yeah. To me, though, the biggest disappointment of the night is that Kristen Ritter is pregnant. That was the thing that got me. I'm like, and then I had to look up her husband or her boyfriend or whatever it is that got her pregnant.
Oh,
and I'm
my.
Like, that, I. Now, all I
don't
can
care
think of
him, huh?
I had a shot. That's all I'm thinking right there. That's it. That's the beginning, middle, and end.
What is
Could
she
have
in?
Been me and Jessica Jones.
What's
she's been in a bunch of stuff. Okay. She's Jessica Jones.
Yeah, Breaking Bad. Yeah. Probably a lot of women in their 70s, you know, grandmas sitting on couches elbowing their grandson and saying, you see that Sam Elliott right there in 1977? Your granny and I.
I got to tell you, though. I am. The only disappointment, I know Mahershala Ali is just amazing, but I just wanted to see Sam Elliott win just because he's Sam Elliott. He got because I'm so used to him talking to me about a banquet beer and not seeing him or about a truck that's spinning out
something.
On it. You know, he's always in the voice thing over a commercial.
Yeah, it would have been nice.
Yeah, it'd have been nice. He was great in that movie, too. It's so funny. That is the best movie to not win all the awards it was up for, except for Best Song.
Yeah, I would agree. I really, when we saw it last year, I thought I was probably going to win 8.
Yeah.
So,
brings a tear to my eye. I know. That's what I'm talking about. Make Kevin cry.
I know. That surprises.
I didn't know I was able to cry.
Kevin, who wants to invest in the Orchid Evasia chain in
the
Florida.
Bobby Kraft.
I was a little emotional last night on our little text group. Yes.
Yeah. All right. We got to go. Thank you very much. Richard, thank you very
much.
It's
an honor just to be nominated,
yes,
guys.
That's what I've been told.